Blog Talk Radio.
ESPN New York 98.7 FM. You're listening to Sports In Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. Before him there was none, after him there shall be no more. You have the man that takes you inside what goes on in the world of sports. He's in the dugout. He's in the clubhouse. He's right by the water cooler. He is everywhere you need him to be to let you know what's going on. And also you listen to the movers and shakers in the world of sports. You are found the right place with the legendary Doc Stanley on Sports In Depth.
And if I may say that the Sports In-Depth Nation is here. The Sports In-Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is indeed here, and that's the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, good Doc.
Yeah. Wound up some. Not some of madness. But I'm feeling good about it because by the grace of God, next week is time. I should be. My beloved Fortaleza. See it now. Out at the beach. I'm Bart Meadow sitting down there with Peter. And now we have a new friend, Marcos. Here. Jill should be getting ready to play. Advance. On a four. Oxygen exposing their Blog Talk Radio. That's in Guardian Network. Let me find a prayer here. Many. No. Now's the time to use them. And Keith Mendoza soon going to Clever Trinidad. I mean, Betty Susan Mendoza and little coming over mission in. That's kind of rare. Here we go. Hey Father, I come before you today to pray for every member of my family. Bless each and every one of them with their heart desires. If any of them is going through hard times, please live them and restore them with your blessings. Let them remember you in times of need. All good things come out. You bless them with good things in life. Please order their steps so they can be right place at the right time. Let them. Evil plans of the enemy. Bless you to answer my prayers. Jesus Christ. Amen. I'm going to
a Rádio Pajeú é o mundo todo. Fala Stanley, direto dos Estados Unidos.
Meu nome
é Doug Stanley.
Meu nome é Doug Stanley.
E eu moro em Nova York.
Eu moro em Nova York.
Nos Estados Unidos.
Nos Estados Unidos.
E estou ouvindo Radio Web Pajeú.
Estou ouvindo a Rádio Web Pajeú.
Um abraço.
Um abraço.
Hugs. God bless you.
Deus abençoe você.
Eita, menino, quer dizer que agora é internacional, é?
Yes. Ué.
And another one. I wish you a wonderful day in the presence of God. I pray His Holy Spirit be with you in everything you say and do. I wish you the joy and the strength of the Lord to be your constant companion, and may you be guided by His amazing peace. Yes, I bless you, my friend, in the presence of our God, in the grace of the power of the precious name of Jesus. May the birds of the sky sing over you, and may the flowers of the fields declare God's love for you. And with that, Sam Cooke opens up with us here on Sports and Dead Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network.
Oh, there was a woman in the Bible day. She had been sick so very long. But she heard my Jesus was passing by. So she joined the gathering throng. And while she was pushing her way through, someone asked her, what are you trying to do? She said, if I could just touch the hem of his garment, I know I'll be made whole. She cried, money here and there until she had no more to spare. The doctors they done all they could, but their medicine would do no good. When she touched him, the Savior didn't see, but still he turned around and cried, somebody touch me. She said it was him on your garment. I know I'll be made whole right now. She stood there crying, oh, 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 and oh, 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 Lord. And oh, 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 said if I could just touch the him on your garment, I know I'll be made whole right now.
This is Michael Bellamy of Brooklyn Independent Media, and you're listening to Doc Stanley of Sports in Depth on Blog Talk Radio.
And with that, with the basketball season in full swing, open to another prayer. First prayer of December. Heaven for you. Dear God, I come before you today with a grateful heart for the gift of life and for protecting me throughout the month of November. I thank you for all the blessings and good health, especially for your loving kindness that enables me to face all the challenges in life. May this month be filled with joy, financial breakthrough, and miracles. Keep us safe and healthy, always. In Jesus' name, the Lord. Amen. And with that, we're going to put a little bit of music. He was 6'9" and 8. The Catholic school. Right, when they got out of junior high school. That's just going on in public school, you know, fights and stuff. Nothing serious, but, you know, there's always some nonsense. Didn't have the peace and tranquility. So, had to pay a penniless figure. Stanley Sports Net Blog Talk Radio. So yesterday, Mila was so nice and beautiful. She'll never get tomorrow. Happy birthday. Happy 11th month. And tomorrow will be the birthday of Ben Hunter. And the day after that, Larry Bird and the voice that brings it to Death Nation. I think Johnny Bench's birthday is 7th. Brazil wins today. Tyson Fury, the best pound fighter. The most fundamental fight. Yeah, that's one thing about Mayweather. Mayweather was a very fundamental sound. And so was Hopkins. Killer, happy birthday to you, girl. God bless you. And we got to send something to her, too. Dr. Andy's Sports Net Blog Talk Radio on the Trusted Government Network. We're going to play another... I'm going to play another Sam Cooke song. But I was playing... I saw this song the other day. And it was early Earth, Wind, Fire. And people don't remember that one time Earth, Wind, and Fire, the young lady in the band. Yeah. Kept it on my phone and my WhatsApp. It's in the sky. I'm going to get June to talk a little boxing for a little more time.
Chelsea from Tennessee.
What's up, Junebug?
Doc, I got to get back to you in a couple of minutes.
Okay, do that. Need
yeah,
you. Careful, okay. So, Junebug, get back to us. Lady A, we talked about some things here, too. See if I can get Edgar to really give us a little inside tip, because we always try to catch it with him. And Terrence Crawford. Fighting this weekend in his hometown. Title fight. I think it's the first fight ever in he's fought at home. So we'll be keeping eyes on that fight. It's a pay-per-view fight. I wouldn't know. It's kind of crazy. Here's a guy that doesn't do well on pay-per-view. And, you know, I don't think he's going to do that well here. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see, you know. We will see. So with that, we're going to go into... It's the Christmas time of year, and I just heard a great Christmas song yesterday. And, you know, I forgot it. You know what? Maybe you got so much Christmas songs here. I forgot about that. You know, you play it, and you say, Christmas every day. It's Christmas every day, and you forget it. But this was just really, I really liked it, you know. And we're going to play it for you here. It's Christmas Waltz.
Fill his sleigh with thee. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth, Blog Talk Radio, the Trust Is God Radio Network.
And if I may say that the Sports In-Depth Nation is here. The Sports In-Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is indeed here, and that's the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, good Doc.
And we'll, Rudy, and we'll keep some Christmas music going. Sarah Reeves. Come on, Sarah. New jazzy sound now, baby. It's that time of the year. But every day, every way is the time to magnify, glorify God and thank Him.
Go daddy on the mountain, over the hills and everywhere. Go daddy on the mountain.
And Death, Blog Talk Radio, and the Trust in God Radio Network with Melvin, Doc, and the Sports Posse.
This is Michael Bellamy of Brooklyn Independent Media, and you're listening to Doc Stanley of Sports in Depth on Blog Talk Radio.
Some more music for you. What's up, Wayne? Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth. I'm doing my show here, Jerry. How you doing, Wayne?
Listen, man, I'm
yeah, well, how you feeling, Wayne?
Oh, I feel good.
No, we here. I'm doing the show, yeah. Well, all of us here at the radio station send our deep condolences to you and the passing of your lovely wife. You know, Wayne Slater, gentlemen, one of the pivotal superstars, not only in sports, but outside society, one of the greatest player in the history of United Action Baseball. You know, he's pretty good when I was lead-off man for him with the Jets. I had to set things up for him, you know what I mean? But, you know, Wayne, you know, you've been a pillar in the community, man. You and old Jumpshot Jonesy, man. And I'm celebrating the 11th month birthday of my granddaughter, as I'm also recognizing the 11th month passing of my mother in a few more days. And you know, we got a Christmas card to get to you too, but you know, we just wanted to convey our feelings towards you. Because of the admiration and the love for you. You know, it's two things to be respected and liked. Some people are respected and not liked. Some people are liked and not respected. You know, you're a guy, you know, and what I got you here, when you know, you look at how I was talking today
somebody, you know, there just no more black baseball players in baseball, Wayne.
Right, right. But we'll talk about that later, man. I called to tell you what was on my heart, man, and that was that wonderful card that you sent me. It's going to keep my, well, my spirits are pretty good anyway, but they're going to keep my spirits lifted. At least for the rest of this week, man. So I just want to thank you so much,
God. Wayne, as
I said before, we'll talk and we'll talk.
Well, no. My thing, I'm glad that you understand that you always are in our prayers and in our heart. And that's just the way it's got to be. Thanks for calling, my brother.
I believe you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Wayne. Okay.
Okay, bye.
Okay. Wayne Slater recently just lost his wife. And Slater's one minor league baseball. He's baseball. He just wanted to say thank you. You know, and that's old school stuff there, you know. So took it, and all I did was doing the things that, first of all, Chris is supposed to do. Doing the things that he's a teammate of mine, the A Jets, you know, in the Nine Action Little League and Pony League. Been a pillar of the community, and he just called, you know. And I just want to catch him here for a moment or two. Wayne Slater, a name a lot of you have heard, and played Chicago Cubs for a little while. But here's your show. I just, you know, you don't get saluted for doing the right thing. You know what I mean? It's the right thing to do. I was heard said here about his spouse passing, and it was nice in the call. He caught me on the air. I want him to shout at that, and he's got other things. He said, the Bible tells you that, you know, you lift each other up, you support each other, if your friend has a problem, you have a problem. The great man Boykin talked about that, you know, how you go to your friend's house and the lights are out, nothing in the icebox. You don't say, hey, man, you need something to eat. You know, he'd go down to Con Edison, cut the lights back on, refrigerator's working again. And then you just go to the supermarket and buy some food. There's some things that automatically come with friendship. Christianity, you know. Christianity is a title. Chris, just a title. Too many people, it's just a title. Friendship has a sincere obligation. It's done automatically. You know, it's two and two is four. Three and a half, no, don't do. Don't mind being four and a half, okay? But, nice for him to call me like that. I did that card in the mail on Saturday, so he got it. And you know, you didn't have to send it, you know. But I just thank him for calling, and he happened to catch me on the air. And I just wanted you to hear the name Wayne Slater. A lot of you out here have heard him here in the New York metropolitan area. One of the great athletes of our time, and more importantly, one of the great Christian human beings of our time. Doc Stanley, Sports and the Blog Talk Radio. On the Trust in God Radio Network.
Hi, this is Panama from Beauty and Barbershop Andres, located in the Bronx, New York, 27B, 175th Street. Hola, este es Panama, de Beauty Barbershop Andres, ubicado aquí en el Bronx, en la calle 175. Venga y vea su barbero, el Gran Panama.
Doc Stanley, Sports in the Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust in God Radio Network. Doc Stanley and the Posse, Panama. That's the place to be. Trust in God.
Panama is teaching me a lot about football. And you said, Doc, you should know that before. No, I'm talking about real football. You know, what we call soccer. Caught the Brazilian game today, 4-1. They had four goals. You know, when you score one goal, in football, that's just about the game in a lot of cases. Two, wow, you know, and three, especially if the other team has none. They had four zip, and Neymar scored on a penalty shot. They could have had six zip. They could have had six zip in the first half. At the same time, too, we want to keep Pelé in our prayers, the greatest footballer of all time. I've been blessed. I remember my friend Peter said, you know, Doc, you've met both Pelé and Ali. And good buddies. But, you know, the only person I'm looking to meet is God and Jesus. Now, I'm just so glad they've encamped me in my life. And I know they exist, what they do for me, Don't have to. God doesn't have to prove nothing to you. But the fact that I can say I met Pelé and Ali, not because of who they were as athletes, but because of who they are as people. Man, this, you know, I remember the last time it was Ali, had him sign some stuff, and I gave him a couple of things, and I was putting stuff back in the bag. He looked at me, to the bathroom, said, hey, man, what you hiding in the bag? I said, champ, I'm not hiding them, champ. You know, you can't sign everything. So make everything in the bag. Ali, only two athletes, time. You mention their name. And they're known in a hut in Africa and at the top of a penthouse in the Hilton is Muhammad Ali and Pelé. You know, way before Jordan. You know, Jordan is known, and Mike Tyson, too. But, you know, until Jordan did that World Cup, the World Cup, adios mio, of Amisa, Dream Team, you know, Ali, okay, and here's the bottom line. Only Ali and Pelé in their lifetime had a war stopped to see them perform. Ali Frazier won, and Pelé. Dr. Danny Sports Net, Block Talk Radio, Trust and Government Network. It's a little music for you. Some more Christmas music for you. And one of my favorites, and I just, every time I think about it, I just get a little upset. And I got a chance to see her and didn't get over to shout at her for a minute or two. But I'm going to see if I can get a hold of our Junebug to join us for a minute or two here before we cut out. And this is a great Christmas song, too. I remember hearing it. And you know, you thank God for a second chance. I heard the beginning of this song as I'm going around the channel. Man, it's got to be 20 years ago, man, or more. And I'm like, let me move to another channel. I was moving around, taping great Christmas songs. And so I heard this one, and I heard the beginning of it. And I said, no, you know, let me move on. Yeah. And then when I came back, I caught the end of it. Oh, my, what was that? And it was, as far as I'm concerned, the best rendition of First Noel. I'm just wondering why we're not hearing it. Okay, let me see now. I got a little some volume here. Doc Stanley, Sports Net, Block Talk Radio, Trust and Government Network. Where is my First Noel? Okay, I'm having some problem getting it going. All right. Well, then, if that's the case, I'm a little upset by this, too, because it's not playing like I wanted to. What about that? My studio's giving me some problems. Wow. I may have to use a whole nother venue for my Christmas music. But I do have some more stuff. I have Mary Jane Blige with It's Christmas. But I'm going to try to get June back with us and talk a little boxing real quick. So we'll deal with all of that momentarily. If we can get June back in for a second or two. Okay?
That's Chelsea Fantastic.
You see, Juba?
I'll call you back in a couple of minutes.
Tempo, baby. Okay. And with that, we're going to play some more of what I taped the other day, Christmas music. So, hold tight. Good boy. No, I remember, it's always good to have a backup. I remember Weston years ago, and the guy was. We'll take a commercial break just a minute. Don't anybody move. We'll be right back. That's a little strange here. Okay, well. I don't know what happened musically, why, but let's try this. The Christmas Waltz. No. I wanted Mary J. Blige first. I think I want Mary J. Blige. No. You know what I'm going to do? Penny Hawks. Went to Wonderland. Everybody listening. Some other studio problems here. Was thinking we're going to get some more studio music, but good thing I have these here, huh? And what I really liked, too, was Mary J. Blige. You know, well, I gotta say happy birthday to my granddaughter. So we're going to play... Well, I was thinking we were going to play some more. Well, we did say that till yesterday. And... it just seems that my studios is not giving me the music that I need. And I'm glad that I happen to have this other music here. So, with that, we're going to find you some more Christmas music here before Junebug joins us. So just hold on. I thought I had a nice one that I sent Ed and Eileen. And I think this is it. Kind of like the musical take on this. Listen in.
Some Christmas music there. And, okay, wow, got a little caller. Who's joining us here? Hello?
Doc, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, Jump Shot?
All is well.
So good to hear you, John. That's great. You know, Wayne Slater is just good. This is another one of those great human beings that walk in the earth here. Well, good. I'm looking for Junebug to come and talk about boxing. We've got here, you know, I'm looking at this huge contract that Verlander got. I'm saying, wow, you know, this is it's amazing. You know, this guy just $87 million for 2 years, didn't play the entire season this year, didn't play at all last year, okay, and gets an $80 million-plus contract. Last year, Schweitzer comes on at age 38. He gets a huge deal. I hate getting him opt out of his deal. And there was so much questions about, well, you know, Yankees didn't want to give Aaron Judge anything too big because he's 31 years old. Well, Verlander is 40. Like I said, didn't play any of the previous year. Coming up Tommy John surgery. Got injured this year. Was remarkable when he was playing, 18-4, 1-point-something ERA. But as he came into the World Series, he had never won a World Series game. And he won that under Dusty. So Dusty, again, has a historical part added to a legendary resume. Justin Verlander is Dusty Baker's only manager that he's won a World Series game with. But, you know, I look at the money that DeGrom got, and I'm saying, wow. Like my man from across the water, John, I'm just like, you know, there's another guy that's hurt, been injured, but they're making a remarkable amount of money. You know, and for pitchers at that, I could, excuse me, remotely go with everyday player, Jump Shot, but here's a pitcher who's solely independent because no matter how well I pitch, you got to catch the ball and you guys got to score runs. Your thoughts on the big contract that Verlander just got with the Mets?
Well, good for him. It's interesting that, you know, he didn't want to stay in Houston and play another season or defend his or help to defend the World Series championship, you know, with Dusty Baker. You know, I don't know. You know, I'm not trying to suggest anything, but you know, it's just interesting that he's
you know, it's interesting that you brought that up. You know, everybody's looking at Altuve as one of the big villains in the scandal, but wasn't Verlander on that team too? Yeah, he was. Yeah. You know, everybody's talking about Altuve and boom, 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 and he's the poster child for this scandal thing, and supposedly. With Beltran being on that team, I think there was some repercussions of not letting him get the managerial job with the Mets, but it's just it's remarkable to me, as great Mary Borchin says, greatest boxing mind of our time, that, you know, there's no scathing or no negativity assigned to Verlander from the scandal thing, and more importantly, a guy who hasn't pitched in 2 years just about, and didn't win a World Series game until this year and had blew a 5-run lead. Yeah, I know the 1-point-something ERA in the 18, he would have won 20 games, but he didn't win 20 games because he got hurt again. And so you look at DeGrom, who's been hurt the last 2 or 3 years. He's the best pitcher. But, you know, pitching every fourth day, every fifth day during a month is a whole lot different than pitching every fifth day once a month. You know, complexion of connection. You know, I had a guy said something, and you say what you want. He said, baseball is a white-ass game. And only 7% of the players are black. But you just look at how there's never any problem of giving any money, and you can justify it to, as I always say, the complexion of the connection, Jump Shot.
Yeah, well, he didn't stay with that black manager to help defend the World Series championship. You know, and they offered him $25 million, I think. But he opted out. So his opted out was an indication that he didn't want to stay. I'm not saying, you know, I mean, it just is, as you would say, it's sad and touching, or it's interesting that you know, he didn't want to stay. But they're fortunately for the Astros and Dusty, that they are a very deep team. They just
The reality of the situation, Jump Shot, is they're not going to miss Verlander. I mean, he was outstanding when he was pitching, but they're not going to miss him. Hold on a second, Jump Shot. Okay, Junebug, got you in here for a minute. Yeah.
Doc, I can't stay long, though. What's going on? Everything good?
Just need you, baby. I need you to talk to me about the fight.
I can't right now, Doc. It's not a good time.
Well, just
yeah,
Good. Just tell me something. That this fight with Crawford, what's your thoughts on that?
I think, you know, Crawford's going to make easy work of this guy, you know. Shouldn't be a hard fight for him. It's not going to be like he's fighting Spence.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, can we say how scathing is this for him to walk away from Spence? I mean, he's not a pay per view guy. I don't see this fight doing good, June.
He sees it doing good only because he's got half of the $10 million. So, you know, whether it does good or not, you know, it's not his. He don't care because he's getting his money. Mm-hmm. So he's all about the money. You know, he's getting his money up. He's getting half the money up for the other half, I believe, after the fight. So, you know, it makes sense to him because he's getting paid. You know, but I don't know, Doc. I mean, I he's not pay per view status. I know that.
The fight, Chocolito, you said early part of the fight.
Is there any chance in 2023 that we'll see Crawford and Spence?
I don't know. It depends. Maybe, you know, we can only hope and pray for that because me as a boxing fanatic, I'd love to see them fight. I mean, that's, you know, like I said, you know, it's not, you know, they both kind of need each other if they want to, like, for their legacy, I would say, you know what I'm saying? You know, it would be nice for them to unify that. One of them would unify that division. But if I don't see them fighting at 147, eventually they're going to have to bump heads at 154 because they can't keep campaigning at 147 forever.
Okay.
So, I mean, I would love to see them fight now. Now is the time to fight. They should fight right now. Not next year, not the next weight class. Right now is for all the marbles right now. But, you know, Terrence Crawford decided to go a different route. You know, he offered him a lump sum of money up front, and, you know, he went for it, and then he walked away from the negotiations. Right now, I don't think there's anybody in the heavyweight division that's going to beat Tyson Fury.
And I think the big thing, too, is that he's a big guy, June, with boxing skills.
Boxing skills. I mean, he's tall, slanky. Right? Anybody who doesn't know about boxing will look at Tyson Fury and say, this guy is a boxer. They laugh. But the guy possesses boxing skills, and he has something a lot of these heavyweight fighters don't have, and that's stamina.
Yeah, I like, too, that he always has guard first. Chocolito, big fight. Maybe that fight could have been a draw. He came on the latter part, his opponent the first part. You said a draw you'd have been satisfied with.
I think the early rounds, he gave him away, you know. He didn't press this guy to, you know, like he should have, you know. But this guy won a shot. He came well prepared, you know, and he fought a good fight. They both did, but Chocolatito came up short.
Mm-hmm. What's the future for Canelo, June? What does the drawing board tell you there?
I don't know. We got to wait to see what happens if he's going to fight Bivol in what weight class, because Bivol wants to fight him at 168. Canelo wants to fight him at 175. You know, there's a dilemma there right now. I think Bivol actually doesn't want to fight Canelo right now, and if he does, it won't be in May when Canelo wants. It may be later because he wants to try to become undisputed in the light heavyweight division by fighting Arthur Bedivere for the other three belts. Bivol said that if Canelo wants to fight him, you know, it'd have to be, I think, September next year. Won't be in May when he wants. And he wants Bivol wants to fight him at 168 for all of Canelo's belts.
Wow. Now, why is Canelo balking at this, June, in your opinion?
Because Canelo doesn't want to. I think it'd be foolish for Canelo to fight him at 168, because if he fights him at 168, what happens is if he loses all his belts, then he has nothing. There's nothing. He has no belts, no titles, no nothing. Now, if he fights him at 175 again for the rematch, you know, it's for his title. Win or lose, if he loses again, at least he can go back. Canelo can go back to 168 and still reign as undisputed champion. Now, if Bivol goes down to, if he accepts the fight with Bivol at 168, and he Canelo tells Bivol, okay, I'll fight you at 168 for my titles, what happens if Canelo loses? Hmm. He's got nothing.
Who would you pick at those fights, and is the weight the big difference, June?
I mean, I think everything was a big difference for Canelo when he moved up to 175. I mean, he was, he got beat.
Hmm.
He got beat sound. Good night, guys. Good night, Russ. To my opinion, I think he got beat sound. I saw Canelo pretty much gassed out, like with the fifth, seventh round. He was already tired.
Hmm.
You know, he threw all his power shots. He didn't even put a dent into Bivol.
And what's the word on Lomachenko? He fought a couple weeks at the Garden. You said, and you said this so much. Dr. Danny Sports Network, Blog Talk Radio, Trust and Government Network, Jumpshot Jonesy, and TKO, the foremost boxing authority right here for us, Joe Gilberto Ortiz. You said certain guys, their size does not allow them to move up a weight. And you said Lomo did not look good.
Lomo looks like a little guy at 135, I mean, maybe if he's at 130, but I seen him fight the last guy he fought, but actually was one of his sparring partners.
Yeah, at the Garden.
At the Garden, yeah, and he looked little. He won the fight, but he it was pretty close,
Mm-hmm. Anthony Joshua, what's happening
here? Give me one second, Doc. Hold on.
Okay, yeah, Doc Stanley's putting the Blog Talk Radio, Justin Garvin Network. We got Gilberto, Junebug Ortiz, TKA, the Latin side of Broken Boxing, and Jumpshot Jonesy from the top of the key outside of the gym. Jumpshot puts it right through the rim. If you let him get close, you know what he'll do. Jumpshot will go to the hoop and dunk right on you. And again, we sent somebody out to Legendary Wayne.
Yeah, Doc, I'm sorry.
Okay, June, no, it's okay. We got you back here. What's happening with Andy Joshua? What's the talk there?
I don't know. I heard something. Well, I know he was supposed to fight Andy Ruiz. And that fight is out the window from what I heard. He's fighting somebody else. I don't know who he's fighting. I'll try and find out by tomorrow. But he was in line to fight with him and Andy Ruiz were supposed to fight each other. And I don't know what happened now. I don't know who he's fighting now. He's trying to come back. He's looking for another world title shot. And, we'll see what happens. But I think if he fights with Tyson Fury, he's just going to get his ass handed to him again.
Yeah, okay. Meaning of having the ass handed to him. What's the story with Wilder? I think he's trying to fight and have another fight and then elevate to another title shot. How did he look at his last fight to you, June?
I've said it before, like Wilder... he's a fighter who only has one tool in his toolbox. You know what I'm saying? He can't open up his toolbox and use multiple tools because the only tool he has is that right hand. And the last fight he had that he fought with Helenius, he knocked Helenius with the only tool he has in his toolbox. That's his right hand. He tried to box. I know they've been working on him with boxing, but, he's the type of guy who's just, he's already... molded the way he is.
One-dimensional. He's one-dimensional. He's a Cadillac.
Right.
He'll never be a Jaguar. He'll never be a Ford.
He's used to using that one right hand. That's his go-to tool. And, it's a shame because, I like him. I don't know. I mean, fighting Tyson Fury, you're going to need more than just that right hand.
Well, evidently, there's not enough. There's rumors, as the great Timothy F. Smith used to say, Andre Ward coming back?
Fight
on. I just heard that, doing the grapevine, I heard someone, he's talking about coming back.
I don't know. I mean, unless he's fighting Betteviv, or maybe the winner of Betteviv and Demetrius Bivol at 175 to be undisputed. But I don't know. I didn't hear that. I think he's pretty doing well being a commentator, but you never know in boxing, Doc. Sometimes the right offer can bring you out of retirement. Hold on one second, Doc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jumpshot, are you listening? Some thoughts today. I know you listen to our boxing guys. Tyson Fury fought this weekend. When again, there's still a lot of, maybe not a lot of areas, Jumpshot in June. People are still.
Yeah, Doc.
Yeah, I was just telling Jumpshot, too, a lot of people still have a little animosity and anger toward Wilder, the way he treated Mark Breland in June.
Like I said, Wilder's a guy who's used to doing things his way. I don't care how many trainers they put in front of him. He was doing that with Mark Breland. Mark Breland, to me, is an outstanding trainer. you know, not only trainer, I thought he was a great fighter back in the days, outstanding person, but, you know, if you got a fighter who doesn't listen to his trainer, then what's the sense? You know what I'm saying? Breland was just trying to look out for his own best interest, as any trainer should. You know, he was getting pummeled in the fight with Tyson Fury. So he got upset with him because he threw in the towel and stopped the fight. I think he saved his life. It saved his life for him to fight another day. But, you know, Wilder didn't look at it that way. You know, I guess he was feeling some kind of way. I mean, you know, but to me, I think he was just taking out his frustration on Breland because he was getting his ass kicked, you know? And, you know, he was doing the same thing. He was always trying to hit Tyson Fury. Fury weathered the storm with those right hands that he threw. That's all he has.
Mm. We talked about who is fighters of all time, and we said Mayweather is not the best of all time, but he's one of the best of all time. If you put him in numerical order, he's like maybe number 7, number 8, June?
I would say, yeah. I gotta rank him up there in the top 10, you know, because, you know, he's done in boxing. I mean, he beat Marciano's record. And, you know, he's fought, you know, top-tier level fighters in his prime. And, you know, I mean, he fought Canelo. He fought Shane Mosley. He fought Miguel Cotto's. I mean, the name's gone. The fight alone with him and Diego Corrales, to me, that was a classic fight, you know.
Otorio Gotti is another guy he fought.
But are
we recognizing him breaking Marciano's record by beating the MMA fighter? He's 49-0 against fighters.
No, I don't think those fights should count because that's not, to me, I don't, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Even his fights, his exhibition bouts that he's had.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah, okay. I mean,
I don't count those. I mean, personally, I wouldn't count them as professional boxers.
Well, I don't think they are. I hope they're not. But in that
case, I wouldn't count them.
So we're going to stay with number one at Sugar Ray Robinson.
Oh yeah, I mean, come on, Ray Robinson has got to be up there, man. He's you know, the guy was a beast, man.
No, they said Marion Wilkins said to sum up Sugar Ray Robinson, he was a Muhammad Ali with a punch. Ali has said, "I'm the greatest heavyweight of all time, but the greatest fighter of time." See, I always thought, June, that if you took Ali with his skills and ability, and he starts to descend, they're enhanced. He's a faster, more defensive-minded light heavy. He's a faster, more defensive-minded middleweight. He's a faster, more defensive-minded welterweight. I remember when Bob Foster fought him. Foster, he couldn't leave a guy with hands. a guy that big, hands that fast. I'm thinking jump shot. I'm thinking, June, if he goes down in weight, doesn't that enhance his skills ability?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, somebody was saying, well, no, he's down. He's fighting guys as fast as him. I said, no, he's still.
Wait, who's this?
No, actually, one guy made the comment, well, if you drop him down, he's fighting guys that are now as fast as him. I said, no, we, at the heavyweight.
Wait, you mean any fighter in particular, you mean, or just?
No, he was just saying now if he drops down in that weight class, he's fighting guys with speed. I'm saying he's taking a speed that's even faster. If he comes down, his hands are going to be even quicker, I think, as a lightweight or a welterweight as it was as a heavyweight.
Yeah.
No, that's just my thinking on that sort of thing. So that was what I was just saying here. but we're talking top 10, Mike Tyson's top, Mayweather's top 10. You're saying Pacquiao, Sugar Ray Robinson, Sugar Ray Leonard, Aaron Pryor. No question in my mind, Aaron Pryor.
Bertel
Duran. Oh, Duran. Yeah, I think he's in number 3. But no doubt in your mind, my mind, Duran, Tommy Hearns, Pryor, Leonard, they not only beat Mayweather, they knock him out. Concur?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're talking about Ray Leonard, Hearns, Duran. I mean, those guys are fucking. Those guys. They used to fight. They don't fight. These guys that fight now, they don't fight like those guys used to fight. Those guys were fighting 15 rounds back then. You know, and those guys, you know, they put in the work. You know, they weren't afraid to mix it up. I mean, shit, man. Tommy Hearns alone, man, he starched niggas with that right hand.
Hmm. You talk about
he's the one that fucked up Ray Leonard's
eye. That's his
right,
eye.
His detached retina. That's from that power. You mean he had that power that left that right hand? That's how he knocked out Roberto Duran when they fought. It was a light heavyweight, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it was junior middleweight, I believe it was.
Junior middleweight.
I remember the middleweight. But now, where do we put Where do we put Mildred Taylor? I like Camacho in the top 10, but I think he's vastly overrated. I think Larry Holmes is vastly overrated, too. But, you know, Mildred Taylor, not Mildred Taylor, Colonel Whitaker.
Oh, no, please. Hey, come on, man. I wouldn't even, man, you mean, no, I wouldn't classify him. No way in the top 10. No way. Sweet Pea, I don't think he was all that.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought he was all that.
Is Mildred Taylor in the top 10?
I'd rather put Mildred Taylor in the top 10 over Sweet Pea.
Mm-hmm. Is Evander Holyfield in the top 10?
Nah, okay. I wouldn't put him, no.
So then that, with that being said, neither is Lennox Lewis and neither is Riddick Big Daddy Bo.
No.
Okay. All right, we've got Joe Lewis as heavyweights and we got Mike Tyson, correct?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. All right, the jump shot.
Coach Holyfield
June?
Beat Mike Tyson twice or once.
Who's that?
He's in the top two. I mean, I know he
kind of
stayed around.
Jump shot. The Evander Holyfield that beat Mike Tyson beat a done and finished Mike Tyson. At their prime, Holyfield doesn't beat Mike Tyson. And had they fought the first time when they saw the fight. Lennox Lewis only beat, but again, Lennox Lewis beat a washed up, done Mike Tyson. And he was killing the first four or five rounds. And then, you know, the detriment on Lennox Lewis' resume jump shot.
You know why I won't put Lennox Lewis up there? Because Lennox Lewis got knocked out by two of the biggest bums. I mean, I shouldn't call them bums, but two fighters in the boxing. One was Oliver McCall. He got knocked out with a right hand. And two, Hasim Rahman. Hasim Rahman knocked him out with the same right hand, too. I give him his props, but top 10, nah, I wouldn't rate him.
Yeah, and not only that, he only beat Oliver McCall.
Because Oliver McCall started crying in the ring.
Yeah.
He didn't want to fight no more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jump Shot.
I said he redeemed himself. He beat Rahman.
You can't take away the loss that he lost to Rahman. You lost the game yesterday. So the 42 points in yesterday's game doesn't help you win the game, even though you got 42 today. I mean, you know, and he lost it to nobody. Ever knocked out Ali? You know, Ali never lost.
I see.
You know, Ali at his best, never lost to another quality fighter. And the amazing thing about Ali, you take the second Ali jump shot, who's past his prime. The second Ali beat Kenny Norton 2 out of 3 times, beat Joe Frazier 2 out of 3 times, and knocked out George Foreman and beat Floyd Patterson again. Now, here's the amazing thing about that jump shot. Had Ali fought both Norton and Frazier when he was Ali, there'd been no second or third fights. There'd been no second or third fight. That's what's remarkable about Ali. Past his prime now. But he's past his prime now when he fights Joe. But at his peak, there's no second fight with Joe Frazier. There's no second fight with Kenny Norton. If you look at Kenny Norton's resume, Kenny Norton beat no quality fighter outside of Ali. And he beat the past Ali. He got knocked out by Foreman. Okay? He lost to Larry Holmes after he got the title. Okay? He got knocked out by Jerry Cooney. There's no, well, maybe Dwayne Bobic. But, you know, you look at the guys that Ali fought, past his prime, he still beats Joe 2 out of 3. He still beats Kenny 2 out of 3. He beats Floyd Patterson again, and he knocks out George Foreman. And this is Ali at, what, let's say 89, if you rate it for 1 to 100, and he beats these guys. But, I mean, you know, Lennox was an outstanding fighter. And, you know, the heart of Lennox, too, that's the thing of a heart. He's fighting Klitschko. And he doesn't give him a rematch. You know,
Yeah, he retires.
I mean,
How do you...
On that note, dog, I got to sign off.
Okay, 10-4.
Okay, how do you discard...
Okay. I had a book on boxing. Gilberto Ortiz joining us. We still got Jump Shot here with us. Yeah, Jump Shot. You know, if you look at Lennox's resume, and you can't take none away from him that it was, excuse me, the great Emmanuel Stewart that made, even the fight that he was fighting with Tyson. Had he fought Tyson a year sooner, Tyson would have been a butt. I remember the great referee, Eddie Cotton said that, you know, the first 3 or 4 fights, if you look, he was very defensive. And it was Emmanuel Stewart said, hey, man, get out there and fight. You know, you're fighting like a little bit. You know, and my book said, you know, the English fighters kind of fight and boxing more like a sport than a mode of, I guess, of survival or aggressiveness. It's more like a chess match. But Lennox, like I'm saying, you can't take away. Yeah, he you know, it's not like you lost to the Packers in January and then, you know, I mean, in September, you come out and beat him in December. Okay. But, you know, and it wasn't too jump shot. How he got knocked out. He got knocked out. You know, I know. You, okay, I no hit you my last start, and now you got two hits, and you beat me 2-1. You can't take away from no hitter. I no hit you. I no hit you. And he got knocked about, you know, these aren't top. Let's say if we being kind, we'll make him B-minus fighters or C-plus. Okay, yeah, they both won the title. They were champions. But, you know, a lot of guys are champions who are not champion caliber, and a lot of guys who are never champions were champion caliber. Charlie Burley is one of the guys that, you know, was champion caliber. Trying to think of, you want to say a lot of ways Howard Davis was. You know, Howard Davis, ironically, in the 1976 Olympics, you know, he was part of that great team, him, Ray Leonard, Leo Randolph and the Spinks brothers, and he was voted the top fighter of all the fighters in the Olympics. He was now not Ray Leonard. It wasn't Ray Charles Leonard. It was Howard Davis Jr. But you know, he didn't win. They thought he'd be the sixth guy. He had a great fight, and he got dropped in the next to last round and lost a close fight to Chapo. You know, and but you know, I'm just you're looking at Lennox. And there's no good way to lose, but, you know, Lennox got not. You're right. He came back and avenged the losses. I mean, we take – you look at Roy Jones Jr. Roy Jones Jr. lost to Montel Griffin on a bullshit disqualification. The next fight, he knocked out Montel in the first, second round. And I made him say, hey, man, you made me do this. But you know, so that was he vindicated himself. Because in that case, he came back and he knocked him out, and it wasn't his fault that he lost. It was a nonsense disqualification. But, you know, Lennox got knocked out. Nobody ever knocked out Muhammad Ali. Nobody ever knocked out Ray Leonard. Never. Nobody ever knocked out Sugar Ray Robinson.
Terry Norris.
No, he did not. He didn't knock out TKO. It wasn't a knockout. TKO. Ray Leonard was never knocked out. TKO, he was stopped. He was stopped by Camacho, too. Camacho stopped. But, and I remember that fight. I'm glad you said that. His only fight that Ray Leonard ever fought at Madison Square Garden. I remember the late, great Butch Lewis was standing at ringside and was saying, hey, you know, he don't have it anymore, but he said this place should be full. But I thought the garden was full that night. But he said, you know, they should be there to see the great Ray Charles Leonard, ironically named after Ray Robinson, not Sugar Ray Robinson, because Sugar Ray Robinson's real name was Walker Smith Jr. Ray Charles' real name is Ray Robinson, and Ray Leonard is named after the singer Ray Charles, who ironically is also
Michael Bellamy of Brooklyn Independent Media, and you're listening to Doc Stanley of Sports in Depth on Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's really ironic that he goes to Ray Robinson asking to use the prefix Sugar. And Ray Robinson's real name is Walker Smith Jr., and he's named after the song, the singer, the great legendary Ray Charles, whose name is Ray Robinson. But when Ray Charles came on the scene, the guy said, what's your name? He said, Ray Robinson. The guy said, no, you can't use that name, man. Everybody knew Ray Robinson, so. What's your middle name? Okay, Ray Charles. People don't know Joe Louis used his middle name. You know, his name is Joseph Louis Barrows. He dropped the Barrows so the family wouldn't know that he was fighting. And people call him Joe Louis, but his real name is Joseph Barrows. But he dropped the Barrows, and so, well, the rest is history. And, wow, there's a lot going on. Dr. Stanley Sporting, the Blog Talk Radio, Trust Government Network. I got Jump Shot Jonesy here. We had the working on boxing Latin side with Gilberto Ortiz this Saturday. Terrence Crawford will be putting his title on the line, fighting in his hometown. So we'll see how that works out for him. It'll be on pay-per-view. Other big fights coming up. Well, we'll see. Spence should be fighting pretty soon. Well, he won't be fighting this year now. As December's coming, so we'll see what happened with Spence. We'll see him with Lomachenko. Jump shot. You know, just Jets. You can't get down the red zone 7 times and come away with 1 touchdown. Then the game, 1 or 2 more touchdowns. Not only did they win, if they got half of them, let's say three or four, they're big winners. But you just can't get down to the red zone. I've always said this, Jim Chat, when you go down to the red zone and you come over with a field goal, it's a psychological victory for the defense. Your thoughts?
When you have to have your quarterback, I know he had, you know, the jury was still out. I know there was this euphoria this week on the Mike White bandwagon because of his performance against the Justin Fields-less Chicago Bears, a 3-7 football team. And when you had to play the cream of the crop or the number one team in the in that same division with that same quarterback, and he had to throw 57 times, you know, that's probably not a good – that's not a formula for success against a team like the Minnesota Vikings, which is the number two team in the NFC right now. You may want to have your balanced attack, and they didn't. So in addition to the fact that they didn't execute in the red zone, there was an absence of a sustained running game to keep Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota offense off the field. And when they got down into the red zone, they did not execute. So those factors. And thirdly, Mike White having to throw the ball 57 times, you're not going to be, you know, I don't think that's a good number for a quarterback who's technically the backup quarterback, but he did have a, you know, he did have a productive game. You know, he had a very good game last week. But again, that's against the Chicago Bears, and the jury is out. And what Robert Saleh and the Jets are looking for, especially at the quarterback position, is consistency.
Yeah. How much though? Do we put this on the coach for his play selection down in the red zone?
Well, it is. It's on the coach. It's on the coach and the offensive coordinator.
There you go.
Again, you know, you're 57 times. It's you're not Tom Brady doing this. And so now, you know, they didn't win this game. What do you do next week? Next week, do you bring back Zach Wilson? Do you stay with Mike White? They went into this game against this team with players wearing a Mike White T-shirt.
Really?
And yep, coming off the bus. And so what are you saying? And that's where Robert Saleh, you know, I mean, maybe he didn't know these guys were going to do that. We win as a team, we lose as a team, you know. And Zach Wilson didn't really handle it well either because he didn't really take any personal accountability or responsibility, you know, for the loss previously. However, you as the head coach, you know, you got to really, you know, you got to crack down. He said, listen, we win as a team, we lose as a team. T-shirts and things like that with the backup quarterback, that may be fun, but you got to go out and win this game. You're going to Minnesota, and you're playing against the number two team. The number two team in the NFC National Football Conference.
Mm-hmm.
So, you guys haven't arrived yet.
Had they won yesterday, how much is that a different spin on everything?
Oh well, winning is the cure all. Winning is the cure all. You know, winning is the cure all. So, you know, their opportunity now, and, you know, they're in this year, the AFC East, you know, they're in the running. It's a very competitive division. Every team in that division is over 500. It's ironic. Every team in the NFC East is over 500 or 500 and better. And every team in the AFC East is 500 or better, which has got to be a first and very rare. Both Giants and Jets are in divisions where the last place team or the so-called last place team is either 500 or better. So they're in very competitive situations. Miami lost to San Francisco. So they had an opportunity to gain a game on Miami. Buffalo did win.
Yes.
And New England, who did lose, but they're still over 500.
Yeah.
So, you know, that one got away from them. And then not only that got away from them, next week they have Buffalo in Buffalo.
Yeah, which is that you're talking about? That's rough.
Yep. So Josh Allen and these guys, you know, they're on a mission.
Yeah, and that would have been so much better going into Buffalo, being in Minnesota, you know, the home victory. Yeah, you're right.
Now, who are they going to start next week against Buffalo? Now,
I guess we have to wait and see whose T-shirt they wear off the bus, huh?
How about that? Now, you have Zach Wilson was the quarterback when they beat Buffalo.
Yeah. You're right.
You know, but, you know, let's see. Let's see. But, you know, their defense is pretty good. But, the offense there, you know, it's okay. And then how they lost the game a couple of weeks ago with the punt return.
New England.
That's a tough loss there.
Yeah.
That's one you kind of gave away.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday's game is a game that should have been won. You got another two or three games, you know, that they should have won. They're in first place. They're in first place.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And at the same time, them not being in first place, we got to point some fingers at the coach. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's definitely responsible. I mean, they're doing better. They're doing better. You know, this is his second season.
Sometimes doing better doesn't mean you're doing good.
Well, I think they're headed in the right direction.
Okay, yeah, but like I said, sometimes being better doesn't mean you're doing good, and we can see that in this game last week and the game against New England.
Yeah, well, it's definitely they're not there yet, not by any stretch.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, so we'll see. This week they have they got a tough game this week. Number one team in the AFC East, and they're going to play it at their home field.
Exactly. Now, what's your feelings on New York State building a stadium for Buffalo?
Well, my feeling is that is a new stadium in Buffalo, New York, on the top 10 priority list for all the things going on in the state of New York, you know, with education, crime, teachers, incarceration, gentrification. Is a new stadium on the top 10? I don't know if it's in the top 20, but, you know, the governor and her husband, you know, I guess they were, you know, participating, you know, with the makings of the stadium. Does it help the economy in Buffalo? I mean, are more students going to graduate because there's a new stadium? Are there going to be less, the rate of incarceration for black and brown individuals going to go down? You know, I don't know, but I guess to answer your question.
Hey, I think not. Okay.
You know,
okay.
I mean, it shows that there's money to do what people want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know if that's in the top 10 priorities.
You know, it's what you said, it's like phone calls. Tell me, sister, earlier. People will call you when they want to call you and need you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Some people, when the phone rings and you see who it is, you know full well what it's all about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, infrastructure, you know, and I really don't, you know, outside of the Bills, and I don't know the ins and outs of Buffalo, New York, you know, population, its city, the dynamics, you know, I really don't know, you know, too much about it. I hope that, I mean, I know they had the incident up there maybe about a year ago, you know, with the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
You know, I don't know the overall, you know, workings and progress
of things.
The city. But my guess is because they are part of New York State, you know, there are things that are plaguing the state. And are they being addressed, or is it better to, you know? And then the other thing is, it's not even a closed-in stadium.
Yeah, this appeals to me. I've said I don't understand how you keep building not closed-in stadiums. You know, I'm flabbergasted by that. You know, how do you not build closed-in stadiums, especially in Buffalo?
Yeah, how about that?
You know what I mean? Especially
you know,
in Buffalo.
So it's been kind of interesting to me. We have the places where they build these stadiums. New Orleans, Louisiana can get a Superdome. Minnesota. Well, they did have the Metrodome up there maybe a few years back. I don't know if they started.
Yeah, the Minnesota did finally go inside after years.
A place like Wisconsin. My wife is from Wisconsin. Green Bay, Wisconsin. You know, I know Lambeau. You know, I know all the history and
the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. Like the Packers like to play in frozen weather. I remember they used to say for years. You know, Brett Favre, man. You know, he can play. Up in that weather in Green Bay. Well, he may maybe acclimated somewhere, but you know, it just Dusty always says football is a cold weather sport, and that's so asinine to say. You know, football is not a cold weather sport. It's played in cold weather, but it's not a cold weather sport. I mean, most of the great college football teams are played games. Teams are from warm weather states: USC, Southern Cal, Florida A&M, Texas. You know, so you know you play in cold weather because that's where your team plays. I'm pretty sure nobody would have a problem, and that was one of the reasons why they brought the Super Bowl about, so a championship game could be played where players could excel and the weather was conducive to that. And, you know, you think back how asinine that was to have a Super Bowl here in New York City in cold weather. I mean, you brought the second car for the wife to drive to work, and she's still taking the bus.
Oh. Yeah. You know, so a new stadium in Buffalo. Well, I guess if it helps,
hey, well,
the economy, the Bills are winning.
So, well, what's the score of that game, Jim? So give us an update on that.
The Monday night game.
Yeah, please.
Okay, we're winning, but that was earlier. In the game, let's see where we are. Tom Brady, are they on a commercial break? So let's see. Let's go to the scorecard. And NFL. Okay, the Saints are winning 13-3, fourth
mm-hmm.
quarter, 8 minutes and 17 seconds left in the game.
So, and what's the score now?
13-3, New Orleans.
Wow.
And the Buccaneers, the Tom Brady-led Buccaneers this year, are 5-7. No, I'm sorry, they're 5-6. And because the division, unlike the NFC East and the AFC East, where all the teams are doing 500 or better, all the teams in the NFC South are below 500, including the Buccaneers, and they're the first place team. They're 5-6, playing the Saints, who are in that same division, that are 4-7. How about that? So, you know, Russell Wilson and the Broncos are about 3-9. Deshaun Watson came back, played against his former team, and they won the game. And the Commanders and the Giants tied.
It seems like the Giants somewhat jumped out and starting to fall back to earth.
Yeah, well, they're still, you know, they're in playoff contention.
Oh, yeah.
But
Cowboys really ran away for a game that looked like it was going to be pretty close for a while yesterday, too.
The Cowboys, they annihilated the Colts last night.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this game is 13-3 in the fourth quarter, 8 minutes left. New Orleans getting ready to try a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it. So it is 16-3 New Orleans over Tampa.
And how much time left now?
8 minutes and 17 seconds left in the game.
A lot of football left. I know you went a little bit, but I was we had talked about the situation with Verlander, the situation with LeBron. A lot of money for LeBron for a guy like Verlander who's been injury-plagued the last 2 years. Jump shot.
Yeah, I wonder if it was, you know, they had to make a move, I guess. They had to do something because, you know, losing DeGrom, 5 years, $185 million, you know, two-time Cy Young Award winner with the Mets, I know Steve Cohen, you know, he was going to make a move, so he did it.
It seems to me, though, the underlying factor was they didn't want to give LeBron that kind of money off of the past health issues and his inefficiency this season and last, jump shot, possibly?
Who didn't come up in your farm system? You know, who didn't run through, I mean, one side in one. You know.
I'm losing your phone line, jump shot. Hold on a second. Good, great. Yeah, Doc Stanley. Hello. Okay, G-Dub. Hello, G-Dub? Yeah. Call on the show. I'm jumping on the line. Call on the show. G-Dub will join us in a minute or two here. We'll close out here. Go ahead, jump shot. Jump shot, lose you, baby?
Right here.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
I don't know if they missed, if they underestimated that with DeGrom. I was surprised when he opted out, you follow the money. Here's a thought.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so last year they got Corey Seager, signed him to a 10-year deal, the Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
They signed, I think it was Simeon, to the Rangers. The Rangers haven't been anywhere near the World Series since Ron Washington was their manager, and he took them to back-to-back World Series. Ron Washington, he's now the third base coach with the Braves. They go and they can go and get Bruce Bochy out of retirement, three-time World Series championship manager who retired and now unretired. He gets another shot, with the Texas Rangers.
Well, I mean, it's remarkable to me, as Marion Boykin says, we got GW here. How, Tony La Russa comes out of both retirement and the Hall of Fame. Bochy comes out of retirement. And I remember some years ago, Bob Melvin came out of the booth. Willie Randolph's never got another chance. Chris Chambers got fired as the world batting champion coach of the Yankees. Never got a chance. The third base guy you just mentioned, the coach for the Braves, has never got another chance. And, the Astros, I heard there's more to than what meets the eye. But you would have thought last year, after taking the Astros to the World Series, they would have considered a 2-year contract with Dusty. But more importantly, after taking them to the World Series back-to-back and winning the World Series, you'd have thought there had been no hesitation in signing Dusty back, and more importantly, maybe a 2-year deal. But no hesitation. You look at the Astros, they're not going to miss Verlander. Okay, Verlander didn't play at all the year before. He came in this year and then got hurt again. And then, you know, he lost that first World Series. Well, did they come back and win that game? He blew a 5-point lead. I mean, he's only won one World Series game in his career, and that was this year with with the Astros. So, but it's just, you know, that guy said something to me. We were talking about something happening, and he made a comment, and he said, you know, with only 7% of the players today in baseball being black, he said, you know, baseball is a white-ass game, you know. And, you look at some of the things that happened. I mean, you're questioning Judge, giving him a long contract at 31, and you give Verlander a 2-year contract at 40. And hold on a jump shot, not jump shot. G-Dub, come in here. You had some boxing things in the internet. What's on your mind, G-Dub?
Well, I'm listening with you guys, man. Finish up your baseball, bro.
No. Well, we've said this. We've got you here because we're going to cut out another 15-20. So we got you here. June always talked about the fight this week. Crawford is fighting in his hometown. And I said something that Dusty kept defending. I said, you know, Crawford didn't kind of understand. He doesn't sell on pay-per-view. People were not going to tune in that fight to see him and Spence fight. They were tuning in that fight to see Spence fight him. Now, Spence was carrying that fight. He's done horrible on pay-per-view. Aaron talked about it. He doesn't want to promote himself. He doesn't want to sign autographs. You know, he doesn't want to do the things that necessitate, you know, the stuff that has to be done to sell a fight. Ali Dunlap said something about the great Ray Charles Lynn. He said, you know, Ray Leonard understood what it meant to be a champion. They tell you to be at 8 o'clock, you're there at 7:30. They tell you to sign a few autographs. Ray Leonard understood. But then again, we're talking about somebody with a combination, which is very rare today, you know, the combination of intellect and common sense.
You know anybody that signs autographs today?
What's that?
Do we have anybody that signs autographs today?
Do we have anybody?
No.
Well, you got a lot of guys that sign autographs. I mean,
yeah.
And because you don't do it, huh?
Doc Stanley signs autographs.
Who?
Doc Stanley.
Yeah, there
oh,
you
cut
go.
It out. And because you don't do it, don't mean it's supposed to be done.
I watched Bernard Hopkins at the Hall of Fame. So 50 people, y'all want me to sign your autographs. You want something for money from me. You all want something from me. Now, all I can think about in my head is this is a champion at the Hall of Fame talking about how his autograph is worth money and how complaining about signing this for fans at the Hall of Fame. Now, this I want you to think about it. When we go to a press conference from now on, I'm not one that usually gets autographs. That wasn't my thing. But a lot of these guys, I notice, I watch them, they're very, very, very hesitant to sign anything because they feel that everything is worth money. This is the era we live in now. And, you know, it's just how it is. It's a business. Everything's about money. And I do notice that. And, again, I know you had a bad experience with Crawford, and I'm not justifying what Crawford did because I think a lot of these guys are much bigger in their own heads than they are in the – history of the sport, but I do want to touch on another topic about Spence.
Well, hold on, let me back. I didn't. I don't say it's a bad experience. I mean, he was rude, but you know, it didn't alter, you know, my world around. I mean, he did, you know, sign, but I'm just saying, you know, because you don't do it doesn't mean it ain't supposed to be done. I mean, Bernard Hopkins. No, Bernard Hopkins turned into an asshole in a lot of ways. Now, understand, like a guy told me, you know, Barry's all right with us, but, you know, Barry's off with some other people, you know what I mean? But we didn't know enough. But, you know, I remember, and June just left here earlier, June talked about when Bernard Hopkins fought in that middleweight championship that Don King had, you know, Bernard was signing Xerox copies. You know, so fame and money doesn't change you. It just exposes you. Okay? So, and, you know, Bernard was a great champion statistically. As a great fighter, Burns not a great fighter. You know, and you know, and I would be.
No, he looks good losing. He looks good. What people don't understand about Bernard Hopkins is Bernard Hopkins was, and again, it takes a really, really, really astute boxing person to understand that what I'm about to say. Bernard Hopkins, you'll see this, Doc. If you watch Bernard Hopkins, every time Bernard Hopkins has been caught in adversity, okay, he has quit. Now, he hasn't quit in a no-mask form. He knows how to look good losing so well that the normal boxing eye doesn't see that. When he fought Sergey Kovalev, when he fought Sergey Kovalev, right?
Right. You know, we was there.
He didn't start opening up until the 12th round and risk getting knocked out only because he wanted to look good in the 12th round because that's the last thing that people are going to remember. When he fought Chad Dawson, he gave up trying to win. He just did just enough to not look that bad losing. So to me, that a great fighter is going to go out on their fucking shield and find a way to win. And when I see a great fighter, we throw around great. Like, it's a whole other world. Sugar Ray Leonard is great. When he fought Tommy Hearns back and forth, he was losing that fight two different times and found a way to win. Win big. That is different. There is very few people that are capable of doing that, and there's very few people in history that have been capable of doing that. So when we throw around great, Manny Pacquiao has done that, okay? You take somebody like – and again, I'm going to throw this out there. I think Floyd's a great fighter. I think
– There is, no question.
But I will say one thing. Pacquiao, I think on the rating scale of where they list pound for pound, I throw Pacquiao ahead of him. And the only reason I throw Pacquiao ahead of him, Pacquiao's come up from flyweight. And before Pacquiao even fought all those big welterweights and junior welterweights, he had a trilogy against Marquez, Morales, and Barrera. That's a Hall of Fame career right there. And he went on to move up. And the thing is with Pacquiao, he's been tested. Now, I'm not saying Floyd is great. I mean, Floyd's been in great fights. He's been hit. But what I'm saying, though, is when you – to find out the caliber of a fighter, you have to be put in a position where you have to find a way to win when adversity hits you at such a point where you're done. And that's, again, and that's where I say the Sugar Ray Leonards, Sugar Ray Robinson, okay? These are different animals. And, again, not just a tough guy like Gotti Ward fight. I'm talking about a skill set. Like when you watch Leonard and Duran fight, and you watch Leonard and fight, this was a highly level skilled boxing match, but it still showed heart, determination, and toughness. So you had the best of both. Look, these fights nowadays, they don't have that. Like, you'll get a good brawl, like Gotti Ward was a fight for the ages. But how much of it was a skill set? Like, when you're watching 15 punches getting thrown, and maybe only three of them land. You know what I mean? And it's at such a fast pace. That's Ortiz. You know what I mean? Like Roberto Duran when Leonard fought the first fight. I just tell everybody, just put on two rounds and then tell me if you think boxing is still the same. And everybody shuts up when I say that. And, you know, that's only me talking, though. I don't know. What do I know?
Well, I you know, you brought up such, and you hear things here that you never hear anyplace else because my people, at one time, I always knew they were the best, but over the course of time, by the grace of God, they're the absolute best. And you brought a tremendous point, man, the ability to lose, as you're saying, Jump Shot, as he's saying, to lose convincingly. you're not throwing in the towel, but you're using the towel, you know, to wipe the sweat off. You know, tremendous point, Jump Shot, G-Dub, tremendous point, man. Wow.
I love Bernard. I love Bernard. I think Bernard is a guy that can't beat a fast boxer. He looks great against guys that are stationary. He has just enough skills later on in his career. He found a way to beat younger guys with just a little bit of craft, you know, these little moves that he had. And he had just enough in the tank to do well. But every time he fought somebody that was a fast boxer, he always had problems, even with Jermaine Taylor. You know what I mean? It's just
And again, I don't doubt him. He's great, good fighter, you know, a lot. But to call him an elite fighter on the level of like a Leonard or something, Leonard found a way to beat everybody. Robinson found a way to beat everybody. There's a big difference, man.
Ali, Ali too. You know, Ray Leonard.
Oh,
and
Ali,
go ahead, G-Dub. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You talk about Ali, man. Ali to me is just. There's Ali, and then there's the rest of boxing. I mean, there's just no comparison. I don't even – when I think of Sugar Ray Robinson, I'm at a point now with Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali is the greatest of all time. That's it. You know, he just – to be a heavyweight and fight the way he did, you know, I can't even – he beat everybody, Doc, in three different careers. You know what I mean? It's just – it's unheard of. You'll never see that again. That guy's going to have his own religion one day, I think.
Okay. Hold on a minute. Let me make a call to make sure so I can show myself in route so we both can win this thing. Okay?
Okay.
Got to ask you a question, too.
Can you grab this one black one?
Go ahead, G-Dub.
Yeah, no, I just, you know, the more and more I'm watching history, and I think of guys like, you know, I love Sugar Ray Robinson. I think Robinson was great. And, you know, I wish we saw more of his career. But I still have to say, and again, this is going to sound crazy because, you know, we have to be realistic on the genetic spectrum. Sugar Ray Robinson beat a lot of white fighters in an era where black fighters really weren't allowed to fight everybody. And, you know, when we talk about Sugar Ray Robinson fighting a guy like Carmen Basilio, fighting a guy like Jake LaMotta. Jake LaMotta was great, but how many people beat Jake LaMotta? How great was Jake LaMotta? Like, you think Jake LaMotta would beat Bernard Hopkins? I think not even a chance in hell. You know what I mean? I just, again, it's the same thing with baseball. How are you going to say these guys were the greatest players because it's one black guy playing against a bunch of white guys? Of course he's going to look great. And again, Ray Robinson, right? You know, he fought Tommy Bell and he fought a lot of those other guys. But there was a lot of black fighters that were overlooked back in the day. So I just can't say where Ali, I feel that Ali fought so many people that were so elite and everybody was evened out at that point, and they were hungry and they're still tough. I just look at his career, and after three years of losing the best of his years, and then on top of that, you know, coming back and not even taking tune-up fights, fighting guys in the top 10, I can't see how, where when Ray Robinson came back, he lost to a guy like named Tiger Jones. That would never have, Ali fought Oscar Bonavena. You know what I mean? And again, Ray, I don't take his accomplishments. He's wonderful. I think he's great. Nobody better than Sugar Ray Robinson. But just Ali, man, I just put him in a different level. I don't know, Doc. What do you think, Doc? Doc, you there?
Well said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you think,
Doc?
You put him above Sugar Ray?
Mm-hmm. Hold on a second. What did you say now?
I said you put him above Sugar Ray?
Hold on, so I got a little plug. Okay, so what I just do is put it in.
This is Michael Bellamy of Brooklyn Independent Media, and you're listening to Doc Stanley of Sport in Depth on Blog Talk Radio.
Yes. Okay, so mix it up with hot water and drink it like a shot.
Hi, this is Panama from Beauty and Barbershop Andres, located in the Bronx, New York, 27B, 175th Street. Hola, este es Panama, de Beauty Barbershop Andres, ubicado aquí en el Bronx, en la calle 175. Venga y vea su barbero, el gran Panamá. Doc Stanley, Sports in the Blog Talk Radio, and the Substance Guard Radio Network, Doc Stanley and the Posse, Panama. That's the place to be.
Okay, G-Dub, you brought us some good points. Do you put Mayweather in the top 10 best fighters of all time?
You know, Doc, I just said it's a great question. And here's my honest opinion, right? You have to, when you say greatest and you say top 10, I think that you got to break it down into eras. And when I say you got to break it down into eras, I'm not trying to get out of this answer.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it comes down to Mayweather is a 12-round, never fought more than 12 rounds.
You know, Jump Shot, you brought such a great point when June Bug was talking about that. I said, but you know, but he said this, though, in his defense, he said, but he condition-wise, he's saying this, GW, he could go 15.
Well, here's the other thing, though, too. How many times a year does Mayweather fight? Now, you have guys that like Sugar Ray Robinson who fought Jake LaMotta twice.
In the same month.
Now, another thing is...
Right in between.
Let's be realistic about another thing, too. How about... I always talk to Marlon Starling about this. How about fighters used to get knocked out, and within 90 days to 120 days later, they fought the same guy and knocked out? The mental toughness. Right now, a fighter who gets knocked out by somebody needs to have 5 setup fights, deal with a psychiatrist, and have a team member go through all kinds of evaluations just to see if he has the confidence. Anthony Joshua had to hire a mental conditioning coach. Can you imagine Rocky Graziano doing that?
About that.
I'm just saying.
They definitely weren't students of or graduates of the Joe Frazier School of Boxing, huh?
No, definitely not. So my point is, I don't know how do you – I look at Mayweather, I think he's great, but when I watch the way he conducts himself, he's kind of like a spoiled little brat a little bit. You know what I mean? So when things don't go his way, the gloves – like I just think that these guys – I just look at the guys from the 80s. I think the 70s, 80s was the prime elite boxing athletes because I think that at that point in the game, evolution, toughness, and – science all evolved at the – that was the peak of it, where they still had the balls, they still had the toughness, they had the skill set, but then at the same time, all of the science and the conditioning and everything that we know now was getting there, where I think at that point it started to shut down a little. You know, so I guess I'm a little bit more – I lean a little bit more towards Ali and Leonard and Duran and those guys. Mike McCallum's, I think that generation to me will always produce the best fighters. Again, I don't take nothing away from the old timers. You know, I think they were great too, but I just think they didn't. You know, they drank more, they partied a little more, and I just don't think that they had the overall tech these guys had.
The thing too of yesteryear's guys is that every sport. They were fundamentally sound. And this is makes Fury such a bitch for guys to beat today because he's fundamentally sound. You know, he's a big guy that can box. You know, you look – I remember the late, great Bob Gibson told me something, and all honor to God for meeting another great person. And he said he was taken back that pitchers had not been taught in the minor leagues how to turn around off the mound and throw the ball to second base. He didn't know how to spin off the around the mound and turn around and throw the ball to second base. This is Bob Gibson.
That's one thing. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
This will sum it up for you.
Mm-hmm.
How in the world, when I was a kid, I was 6 years old.
That was only a few years ago, right?
Yeah, but listen. They handed me a baseball bat. I went up. There was a minor league and major leagues. It was 6 to 10 and 10 to 12 and 11 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather gave me a bat,
I didn't get a hit all season. I used to run out of the plate. But by the time at the end of the year, I was 7 years old, and I hit a ground ball to the pitcher. That was the only hit I got all year. Then the next year, I did better. There was not four outfielders. There wasn't T-ball. There was nothing mm-hmm. like that. And now,
Jim, so I,
on top of
I remember, pros, I mean, real quick, yeah. Mike, I remember me in the little league, I knew how to bat, and by the end of the season, I knew how to hit and got some hits. You're right. Good. G-Dub, please.
No. So now, I tried to follow baseball a little bit this year. The thing is, when I found out they can pay this much money, don't even pitch a full game anymore, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, what in the world? Like, how did that even happen? Like, this is where we're at. We're in a different level now. It's just,
you're so on the money. You're just so on the money. And Jump Shot told me this. There was a guy throwing a no-hitter, and he took him out the game. And he said that's the sixth time this year a guy was throwing a no-hitter, and they took him out the game. Catfish Hunter told me in his day the reason why they had the guys out in the bullpen because they didn't want them in the game in the first place. And never get that. You know what I mean?
Can you imagine them trying to take out Ron Guidry? Ron Guidry would have threw him out.
Yeah, you know what? Back to Bob Gibson, he said the pitching, the manager was coming out to get him one day. He told him, don't take another step. Don't take another step. And then he said, Tim McCarver came out one time to talk to him. He told him, hey, he said, what do you know about hitting?
Here's a question for you. Tom Brady's getting ready. He's getting ready to do it again with a comeback. It's a 2-minute warning. 16-10, New Orleans. But the Buccaneers have the ball. It's a 2-minute warning. In your top 10, okay, in your top 10, where do you put Mike Tyson? Right. It's a 2-part question. Is Mike Tyson in your top 10? And do you separate Mike Tyson, do you break his career up, the first Mike Tyson or the second part of Mike Tyson? Because his career
you have to.
Is his
I
career.
I mean, I've always said this. You know, you have, we
no,
always,
I'm asking,
we always
I'm
include,
asking,
GW, not me, not me, okay. We always include the 3.5 years that Ali lost. We don't talk about the 3.5 years that Mike, the 3 years that Mike lost. You know, the only guy that I can say unequivocally who beats Mike Tyson at his best and Mike at his best is Muhammad Ali. The only guy.
I agree.
The only guy that beats Mike Tyson unquestionable is the first Ali against Mike Tyson. Nobody else beats that look. He had defense.
Okay.
Good.
Can I ask our other analysts? Can he chime in on that?
And also, yes. Excuse me. I'll just do another. I'll come back after commercial.
I know where you stand.
Doc.
I'll just want to hear where you stand.
But hey, if you didn't, you do now.
No.
Go ahead, G-Dub.
So, just to rephrase, I do want to say one. Mike Tyson. Before I answer that, I just want to say how I judge, because I judge a little bit differently. When
okay.
I think about the greatest fighters that ever lived, I don't just judge them on if they could have beat this guy and beat that guy. I go on longevity, what they did out of the ring.
Wow.
So I have two lists.
Okay.
I have a list of the greatest pound-for-pound fighters, of longevity, accomplishments, in and out of the ring, how they conduct themselves. And then I have people. I also have another list of fighters that nobody would have beaten. So on my pound-for-pound list, I have Muhammad Ali as the greatest fighter that ever lived. But
wow.
Now, as people that are unbeatable in their prime, maybe for 2 years, their careers might not have lasted. Like Ali was unbeatable for many years, but like I take Roy Jones in Roy Jones' prime, I don't think anybody in the history of boxing would ever beat him. But so to me, he's pound for pound the best fighter I've ever seen. Now I have to put, as far as he in my top 10 list of greatest fighters that ever lived. No. because his longevity, and there's losses when he came down to where when he had to pull out that adversity.
Now, yeah,
Mike
yeah.
Tyson, I'll tell you exactly where I put Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson is unbeatable at a certain point in his career. But there's one thing I do have to say about Mike Tyson. Every time Mike Tyson was taken to the hill and been tested, okay, Mike Tyson's jaw is not suspect. Mike Tyson's heart is not suspect. Mike Tyson's will to overcome adversity and find a way to win is definitely questionable. Because if you look at it at the end, he put Buster Douglas down. And again, we could talk about, all right, you know, yeah, there was a late count. And that's, and again, we all want, I don't take nothing away from it. And I know Mike didn't train for that fight. And when Mike Tyson, the night he beat Michael Spinks, was unbeatable. Nobody would even push him hard enough to the limit.
You know what? Interject. That Mike Tyson was the best Mike Tyson we ever saw. June 27th, 1988, my birthday in Atlantic City on a Monday. That was the best Mike Tyson ever stepped into the ring.
But here's the other thing. No. What if there was another fighter on that night, another fighter was good enough to take him to waters that he never seen before, just like Thomas Hearn took Sugar Ray Leonard? Would Mike Tyson have had the heart, the stamina, and the wherewithal to overcome adversity? That question has never been answered, because every time that that question had to be answered, Mike Tyson was out of his prime, and Mike Tyson never came through. So we don't know that. We do know that Sugar Ray Leonard, with even 30 fights, has answered that question. Muhammad Ali has answered that question. So it's kind of hard to say how great someone is without seeing them have to go through. It's like that guy that could throw a million jump shots and win every time, and then all of a sudden that one guy that presses him, you don't know how he's going to act under the pressure. So we just don't know, you know what I mean? And again, so it's such a hard case to say, but when I put him in my top 10 of fighters of all time, no, I don't put him as far as accomplishments, no. But as far as a fighter who's unbeatable, yes, absolutely. So
let me throw these. I like how you break that down.
Yep.
Tom Brady did it again. They
won the
13.
Game?
They just scored with 16 seconds left in the game.
What a great
what's score now?
Wait a minute. There's a flag. Hold
okay.
it. Oh, it's got to come back.
Oh, wow.
It's got to come back. Buccaneers were holding, so it's 16-10. This guy has done this so many times, but he's still got 16 seconds left. But it's a holding penalty, so they got to move back 10 yards. Let me throw a couple other names at you. I love how you broke that down. Okay?
Hold on real quick, jump shot.
Okay, so,
Roy Jones Jr., biggest mistake coming down from heavyweight to light heavyweight. But I remember Art Russ Jr. told me this, and another Panamanian connoisseur of boxing said that they felt, he said the night that Roy Jones Jr. fought Vinny Pazienza, Art Russ Jr. said that Roy Jones Jr. would have kicked Ray Robinson's ass. Art Russ Jr. was, you know, there. You know, he knew Ray, he knew Joe, he was the Ali, I think, of Sportscast in New York City. That was his opinion about Roy. I think Roy's turning point was the mistake he made of coming down for 175. Everybody that wanted to fight him were light heavyweight, so, you know, get on the scale, pay way more than 175, and we can do the fight. But as you mentioned, Jump Shot, G-Dub, we saw his vulnerability once he came down and started getting hit. But at one time, you're right, Roy Jones Jr. Was just a monster. Go ahead, Jump Shot, and keep us brilliant about the game, too.
Right, absolutely. I think Roy, I don't know if he was just so good or that good that a little cockiness got into him where he thought he was so invincible that no matter what class he fought in, that he couldn't be caught, and he got caught. So Roy Jones is another name. Let me throw these other two at you as well. Based on your criteria, how you break that down. So we said Roy Jones Jr., Lennox Lewis, and Riddick Bowe.
All right, so Lennox
and,
Lewis.
And I'll throw one more. Let me give you one more. Yep. Marvin Hagler, the late Marvin Hagler.
Now, Jeff said, did you ask me any questions?
Doc, I talk to you all the time.
Okay, all right. Yeah, okay. Okay, you got my take on him. Yeah, go ahead, G-Dub.
So I think that, first off, Riddick Bowe,
to me is Riddick Bowe.
Your top ten.
Oh, top
but
ten.
Go ahead.
Brady did it.
They came back. 3 seconds left. 3 seconds. This guy is just – now they got to kick the extra point, but it's 16-16. 3 seconds left.
That guy's on.
This guy
who caught the touchdown?
Let me see. Godwin.
And when
is there any time left on a clock?
Going up better,
guys. This guy, he's 400 years old. He's still doing 402, it.
402, actually. And you got to take your hat off to him, to his coach. Gentlemen, give me just a second. Why? GW still thinking?
Oh, no. Yeah. Give me a take on the boxing.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, as far as Riddick Bowe, I'll take him first. I don't put any three of them in my top ten.
Okay.
Only because, and again, so Riddick Bowe is, to me, he's a guy that I got to honestly say had, out of anybody I've ever seen, I think he had more natural ability. And especially,
wow,
like his natural ability to fight inside with Eddie Futch. Like, people don't understand the boxing skills that Riddick Bowe had. Like, he was a big man, that big, as fast as he was to fight on the inside and move around. It's just his laziness really, really caught up to him. His toughness was obviously you could see how tough he was in the fights that he had against Evander Holyfield. You know what I mean? His heart, you know.
Oh, that's another name. That name, too. That's another one.
And Evander, I mean, I'll tell you right now, this is my thing about Evander. All right. See, everybody talks about Evander Holyfield's heavyweight career. To me, Evander Holyfield's great because the way I look at Evander is I'm not judging Evander as a heavyweight. I'm looking at Evander as a cruiserweight, a guy that fought Dwight Muhammad Kwawi and was basically put to the test of will, which was unbelievable. You know,
okay, I'm coming in here now. You know, what the hell is a cruiserweight? What the hell is a cruiserweight? Okay, this, I'm going to say this. You keep on going because I happen to be the host of the show. Evander Holyfield was the black Rocky Marciano. Okay? Evander Holyfield was the black Rocky Marciano. What great fighter did Holyfield beat in their prime as a heavyweight? He fought Mike Tyson the first time he was supposed to fight. Mike would have knocked him out. Great champion like Hagler.
Yes, but it never happened. We can't.
I'm not asking him the question. If it would have happened, okay? I'm just, had they fought the first time, Mike would have knocked him out, okay? And when he fought Mike, Mike wasn't Mike anymore. Evander Holyfield is the black Rocky Marciano. And like Hagler and like Hopkins, a great champion, but not a great fighter. Not a great fighter, you know. And this is Doc Sinning. You look at Hagler's resume. He went 15 rounds with Roberto Duran, who came from 135 pounds. He lost to Ray Leonard. Don't give me all that stuff about the gloves and stuff. This boy is smaller than you, ain't fought in 2 years. He goes 12 rounds, and you bitch. And then you didn't come back and fight him again. Okay? So, go ahead, G-Dub.
I think Hagler, again, I think both of them are very, again, and they're very similar. They're tough guys. Their work ethic and their will were, you know, without question. It's just that I when I think of Holyfield, I just put him in a little bit of a different category because I do see guys that for Holyfield to come up, and again, Doc, I know what you're saying, what's a cruiserweight? But just like everything else evolves, we have to look at the total picture. Here's a guy. Now, I know Joe Lewis and those guys fought big guys like Max Baer, but these guys were not athletic fighters. Like, you have to look at a fighter now. The common heavyweight was 200, 225 pounds tops back in the day in the 70s and in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. Even, you know, so when you start getting up there, Holyfield's fighting guys that are – and you got to remember, he even fought that guy Nicholas Velasquez. These guys were much bigger than him, like much, much bigger than him. I mean, the size.
But jump shot. I mean, bigger doesn't mean better.
But my point is, he was fighting guys that were bigger and better in this era. Guys like Lennox Lewis, guys like Riddick Bowe, they were much better than the Max Baers and the Primo Caneras. So when you take a guy, like you always got to say, a good little man is never going to beat a good big man. So when you take a guy who weighs 275 pounds or 260 pounds fighting against a guy who weighs 210, 215, and he's got the same athleticism and the same chin. And it's impossible for him to beat him. So for this guy to show this much heart and skill in the set of all this, on top of having that cruiserweight career, you have to give him some form of, you know, you got to give him some kind of window that he is a better than a Hagler. And again, Hagler, I think, just came around at the right time. Hagler had some big wins, you know, the win against Tommy. But Hagler was a very, you know, just like a methodical, just, you know, he was a good fighter. He was a good champion. He was a great champion. I just don't put him in. I just don't see him having the skills to beat a Ray Robinson or beating any, you know, I don't know. I'd be honest with you. I think Bernard Hopkins probably would have maybe beat him with, you know, in his middleweight range. Because he had that boxing skill.
I think the same big thing with Hagler. If you didn't show fear to him, to me, there's no question in my mind, G-Dub, and I'm glad you guys, because, you know, I'm going to Brazil, so this is going to be a great, good last show. You know, I see Iran Barkley beating him.
That's the night that Iran Barkley fought Roberto Duran, I think Iran Barkley had a chance of beating any of those guys, because he was very – Iran had two good years of boxing. You know, Iran – unfortunately ran into the tail beginning of the 90s with Michael Nunn and, you know, who's another person that we totally overlooked is Michael Nunn. You know, Michael Nunn, before he got, you know, he got to remember, he by James Toney, bro. James Toney is fucking unbelievable. And Michael Nunn was doing very well in that, you know, he beat some pretty decent guys, man. You know, so, and Barkley just happened to fall on that, you know, on that doorstep. You know, he caught that little bit of a window where he did really good with Tommy, and that fight against Duran, I thought he fought a hell of a fight. You know what I mean? That was a great fight. And, you know, he lost because he got knocked down.
How about Aaron Pryor and Alexis Arguello? Where are they in your overall assessment? Those two, and then swinging back to the top 10, because I have a fascination, a fetish with the heavyweights. Give me, you know, like your top three or four heavyweights that may break into the top 10. I know you mentioned Ali. Are there any others as well?
I like, me personally, if I have to go, the heavyweight question I love, because I'm infatuated with heavyweights too. I think, me personally, I say Ali is my number one. And again, this is for fighting-wise, and I think guys that are unbeatable as heavyweights. Is, I think, first off, is Muhammad Ali. I'm with Doc on this. And then I got Mike Tyson as number two.
Okay.
I think third for people
you don't separate the two. You're saying Mike, his whole body of work, Mike Tyson, is in your top
Mike's
10.
Mike's whole body of work, I don't think anybody beats him besides Muhammad Ali. I think third, if I have to say who I think is practically unbeatable, you guys are going to think I'm crazy when I say this. I got to go with Sonny Liston, man. I think Sonny Liston, at his best, I look at a guy who thuds the shit out of people, and he's got superior boxing skills. And I got to look. Okay. He was George. I was going to say George Foreman. I look at George Foreman and Sonny Liston. I could toss those three and four any day of the week. I could twist them any day. But I look at I think he's big enough to beat a Klitschko and tough enough, but fast enough to deal with, you know, a guy like Larry Holmes. You know what I mean? So I just don't see, you know, I thought he was like the – I think if he came around and Muhammad Ali never came around, he would have beat all these guys. Because, look, who beat him? You know what I mean? A couple guys beat him, but he really had a pretty perfect record. You know what I mean? Other than that, he had some consistent knockout. George Foreman, I mean, he speaks for itself, bro. You know what I mean? He got – before he got jammed up, I mean, he came back at 40-something years old and still was taking Evander Holyfield to the till. You know what I mean? So, George, you know, George is a monster. I mean, but I just think Sonny had a little bit better boxing skills than George. You know, he was a little bit more, you know, fundamentally sound. Joe Lewis, I love Joe Lewis. I got to put Joe Lewis at number five, though, because I just don't think Joe Lewis had the power. He had problems with guys like he had problems with guys like Jersey.
Okay, so Ali won. Number two is Tyson. Number three is Sonny Liston. Number four is who?
Yeah. I say George Foreman, and then I say Joe Lewis.
Okay, Foreman's four. Tyson, Joe Lewis is five. Okay, great list. Keep going.
I say, who do I go number six, man? This is where I get choppy with all this
stuff. Before you hit number six, Aguayo and Pryor. Are they in any of the top ten?
I'd have to sort through a heavy list because I got guys like Stanley Ketchel. I got guys like Mickey Walker. I got guys that I got to look at. I got to look at guys like Henry Armstrong, Benny Leonard. You know, then I got to look at guys like Shane Mosley. I got to look at guys like Oscar De La Hoya. Oscar De La Hoya to me. I got to look at guys like Julio Cesar Chavez. So there's so many guys that I have out there. But I will tell you,
Manny Pacquiao.
They are up there, Pacquiao. But they're up there. To me, Alexis Arguello and Aaron Pryor. To me, Aaron Pryor did not have enough time to show how great he was. And he was, I watch him, he was an unbeatable fighter too. He was really good. I mean, he had a style that was really, really impeccable.
Excuse me, just one of the problems with Pryor, though, a lot of people didn't want to fight him. Now, I remember doing a story.
And Arguello
they had
probably
a big
shouldn't have.
I was at the Garden, and it was the plight of Aaron Pryor. Pryor couldn't get fights because nobody wanted to fight him because he was so good as an amateur. He beat Tommy Hearns and Hill McKenty in 1 week. And I'm going to name another. I'm not going to name this fighter, but another great fighter went up in weight not to fight him. So Pryor had a hard time getting fights because he was just too good. When he became a pro, nobody wanted to fight him. So I think that's unfair to look at that little body of work. Let's take that body of work. I mean, he maybe only hit 100 home runs in 3 years, but he was a home run hitter. So, you know, and I remember doing the story, and I told him, I said, man, maybe you ought to give it up. Aaron Pryor, excuse me, was a motherfucker. He beat Tommy Hearns and Hell McKenty in the same week. And you know, so when he became a pro, they knew him already. That's why Kid Pombley had no idea what he was running into. Neither did Alexis until they ran into him.
Yep. And the thing is with him is you look at Aaron Pryor. I like to follow him now as I watch him. And you guys are gonna. I want you guys to. I know this is gonna sound crazy what I'm about to say, but I love watching fighters at their peaks just to see what I saw how. And again, I second-guess myself on this. But when I watch Aaron Pryor, I see somebody that is not duplicated. I've never seen somebody look like him. He has his own style, like an Ali has his own style. Now, I'm going to tell you guys, there's a guy that you guys are going to totally disagree with me. But I'm going to tell you, when I saw this guy in person when he was a lightweight and I watched him fight, and I was like, this guy is something special. I said, he had a style that I've never seen before. He was long. He was fighting off the block. Everything fundamentally that you do. But then on top of that, all these little slippery moves with Adrian Broner. When I saw Adrian Broner in his best before he got tested and shit, I was looking at this guy's skills, the way he moved his weight. I'm like, damn, I couldn't. I was watching a sparring session when he was at Mayweather's gym today. I'm like, I said, what the hell happened to this guy? How did this guy go from being so good to then all of a sudden just average? I'm like, whoa, how did this happen? And that's the thing about boxing is these guys, you could look and be like, oh, my God. And then all of a sudden overnight something changes. And, again, he's not on the level of an Aaron Pryor because he couldn't even hold it that long. But when he fought DeMarco, I watched him. His body movement, you know, even though you don't have the ultimate test in front of you, but to see the level of skill set that I saw there, I was like, to me, it's the biggest waste of talent I've ever seen in boxing was Adrian Broner. Biggest waste of talent. And again, to even go out on a limb and say that, it's constant studying that I watch. I watched him today when he was in a sparring session. The guy hit him on a block. He's hitting the guy with a hook off the block. He knew exactly where to stiff arm the guy. That's you can't teach that. You know what I mean? That's like years and years of just looking at it. And, you know, that's like I said, you don't know until these guys really get into – you got to look at the whole package. Look at Macho Camacho. Doc, you always talk about it all the time. Look at Macho Camacho. That's another guy. You think about unbeatable. How about when he was coming up before he got hit by Rosario, before all the cocaine? How many guys would actually beat this guy in his prime?
Harold Weston told me, when we were watching Camacho – and my late great, my first mentor, the Dr. Frank Bannister, told me, you catch fighters when they're young, never forget you. And we're watching him fight one night.
And John Conner said the same thing. The only thing going to beat Hector Camacho, Hector Camacho, and it was the cocaine. You know, me and June argue, and me and Marion argue. I see Camacho at his best beating Mayweather. Being southpaw, especially the first Mayweather, was an aggressive, offensive fighter. And Camacho's going to give him angles. He could keep him off balance. He's going to beat him. Now, I say there's only four guys that I could say unequivocally, at their best, nobody could beat him. The first Ali, the Rand at 135, Sugar Ray Robinson, okay, and the first Mike Tyson. Unequivocally, when you were fighting them, it's a matter of how long you're going to go. It's a nice payday. You're not going to beat them. You know what I mean? But they were just something else. But like I said, the Camacho, when he was focused, because see, what made Camacho so great was besides his ability, he's a southpaw. I don't care how you're not used to a southpaw. You're not used to it. And that was an advantage that Hagler threw away the first three or four rounds against Leonard fighting conventional. You're a right-handed batter. What are you doing left-handed for? And against Koufax? You crazy?
Mm. Yeah. Hey, I heard my dad talk about him. I really never got a chance to see him fight, but you mentioned his name was Sugar Ray Robinson. But two other guys my dad would mention was Sandy Sadler and Willie Pep.
Yeah. The first time I took my son to a fight, it was Mike Tyson's first fight at the Garden. Donald Curry and Milton McCoury were fighting for the welterweight title. So they had Tyson to be the first fight. So people could go, you know, the Garden was so accommodating, man, you know, kind and Western. So they could go see that fight. I took my son to that fight night, and he sat ringside, by the grace of God, through John Conner. He sat ringside. I got the picture autographed to Sandy Sadler. You know, people talk about how great Willie Pep was. They don't talk how great Sandy Sadler was, who won two of the three fights. But my son, the first fight he ever went to, he sat ringside to Sandy Sadler with me, and then went in the dressing room, and Mike Tyson gave us one a handwriting, which you do have in our collection here from his fight that night. But you're talking about two other great, Willie Pep, Sandy Sadler, you know, you're just a legend. And these were guys, by the grace of God, G-Dub, that you saw because the Garden had two fights a month. The Felt Forum had two fights a month. So you knew that Jump Shot Jonesy's fighting on the card on the 13th and G.W. Mike's fighting on the card on the 21st. But every month there was two fights and then sometimes be upset. But what that did, Willie Pep comes down to the fights. Sandy Sadler comes to the fights, you know what I mean? There's Jersey Joe Walcott, who was commissioner of New Jersey at that time. There's Aaron Pryor. I met Pryor, Walcott, Willie Pep, Sandy Sadler at fights at Madison Square Garden. I saw Salvador Sanchez fight live, but I'm sitting there talking to him, Jose Solomon, at the Garden. I met Joe Frazier for the first time through John Condon, my godfather. Joe's coming to visit. Hey, Mel, do you know Joe? You know, Mike, I wish you could have been there, man. You two jump shot. It was the Garden still was the mecca of boxing, but Ray Leonard had his little team. The first time I saw Ray Boom Boom Sinney live at the Garden, they had a Sunday fight at the Felt Forum, Alexis Arguello against Bazooka Lemon, and I'm sitting there watching the fight with Jose Solomon and Salvador Sanchez. That's the kind of people you had that came. Sadler was a Navy guy. All Navy guys came. Tony Danza had a fight one night down there before, you know, he was the actor. All the crew from Taxi was there. I look over there, another fight. Jake LaMotta, and we're talking, and I talk about Sugar Ray Robinson, and Mr. LaMotta said to me, he said, I fought Sugar Ray Robinson so much, I should have sugar diabetes. But wow. These were the people, and actors, you know, Liam Nelson, the guy that won the Oscar for, I can't think of his name now, they were there. I mean, you know, any and everybody was there, you know, fell for him, and it was, you know, it was a great time, but yeah, Utah is two great names. Sandy Sadler, Emil Griffin was always there, the great welterweight middleweight champion. Was there, he loved my daughter Demony. Emil Griffin, Jose Torres, the great light heavyweight champion. Okay, who at one time thought people thought he'd be a good opponent for Muhammad Ali, but he was there because the writer, he was there. He was boxing commissioner for a while too, you know. But the film, you know, New York was still it. New York was still, as they say, the shit. You had the Garden. You had Gleason's around the corner. You know, it was still the spot. And like I said, anybody and everybody, Mike Tyson used to be there all the time, sitting there talking with Leather with Jimmy Jacobs. Anybody and everybody, because boxers are fight fans too. They love watching their craft, and they support each other. So you always, somebody was there, and they're laughing, and you get to meet them. So now you can ask them and talk about things. They can trust you. They'll tell you things because they feel they know you. Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, another guy. Juan Laporte, the first Puerto Rican to win the featherweight championship of the world. Buddy McGirt, Iran Barkley. You know, you saw these guys go right there and fell for him. Agati, I told him how proud I was of him as a champion. You saw these guys. Guy's another guy, man. You managed to, let's go. He's like, I got signed. He's like, he's going to take pictures. The best of the times are a fight twice a month at the legendary Phil Forum, and you go upstairs, you know, and Vito Interfermo, another guy. Hey, how you doing? Good to see Vito, outstanding middleweight champion. But all these guys are there, all champions from all over the country, you know. But you got all the big guys, Marilyn, Ray Leonard, Walcott, Jersey, Tyson, Mustafa. Uh-huh. All New York guys, all there. Your man,
hey,
GW,
I got two more names for you. Good stuff, Doc, by the way. Good stuff. Thomas Hearns and Larry Holmes, top 10. Your top 10.
No.
Larry Holmes.
The only reason I say Tommy Hearns, no. Tommy Hearns, to me, the only thing that is working against him, he was in too many fights. I just developed this opinion over the last few months. I watched him and Juan Rodan. Tommy was too reckless as a fighter. I think junior middleweight, Tommy was unbeatable as a middleweight.
Make another call?
Yeah, they gave me a freaking call, like at 11 o'clock.
Okay, I got it. 10-4.
Yeah, I'm going to cancel it.
Okay, thanks.
Larry Holmes creeps up there for me. He might be in my top 20. But
okay, you know what? Jump shot, you're on the money. You're on the money, an overrated guy who people say was underrated. Tremendous. And you were talking about Tommy, you know, when Marion Boykin, Dr. Danny Sporting Dead Block Talk, we're in a trusted guy, we're in that show. You know when the show's going great because we're still rocking and rolling. Marion Boykin, when he picked the top four, of the four kings, it should have been five, with Phil Benitez. Tommy was number four. Durant was number one, he said, because Durant was the furthest one away from home and never knew he was lost, and he beat Ray when Ray was at his best. But Tommy was the guy who he lost the big ones. But it wasn't his fault. It wasn't his fault against Marvin as circumstances. He broke the hand, but I think the referee gave Marvin a break, being that he had the Petronelli brothers in his corner, and these guys, they rubbed his legs and messed his legs up. But he broke his hand, but you look at the fact that I told Tommy, you know, Tommy, every fight you ever lost, the other guy didn't win, you lost. And, you know, even though he knocked out Roberto Duran, you're right. When you do the top four, I could do him and Hagler 3A, 3 and 3A. You know what I mean? Because he was beating Marvin. He did knock out Duran. And, you know, the first fight against him and Ray, Emmanuel told me, and Lord, how I missed Emmanuel. He told Tommy, you can't change your diet. But Tommy, and you bring a good point there too, G-Dub, because he was reckless and he stopped listening to Emmanuel. And Emmanuel told him, Tommy, you can't change your diet. Understand this? You need something for rounds 13, 14, and 15. And we see what happens.
Best fights happen. Tommy's best fights, I'm going to tell you Tommy's two best year and best fights. Tommy Hearn beats Wilfred Benitez.
Yeah.
One of the best fights I've ever seen. Best fight I ever seen was Tommy. Tommy fights Roberto Duran after that, knocks him out. At junior middleweight, Tommy's unbeatable, bro. He's unbelievable at junior middleweight. His boxing skill, his power, everything was there. I can't name one junior middleweight that beats him. I can't.
Do you also, when you're doing your overall evaluation, and this is good stuff here from both of you, from your experiences. So you mentioned errors. you know, errors.
Yeah.
And I'm an error guy also, especially when it comes to basketball. Doc and I have talked about this, you know, 60s, 70s.
Yeah, he jump shot 90s. Is staunch on his move when he's not moving. Real quick about, when Tommy beat Wilford Benitez, he opened my eyes to his boxing ability. I thought Benitez was going to win that fight, G-Dub. I really did.
Right. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so too. I mean, he really rose up that fight. He really did.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
A few others.
He elevated.
A few others. I can't think of off
certain
the top,
status.
But there's a few others. But each era and the caliber of the box of the caliber of the boxes in those particular weight classes, and then the evolution from the 15 rounds, then down
yep.
to the 12 rounds to now 10 rounds. And we have a young protege coming up. Keep your eye on him. His name is Jahan Ingram. He's in the Mayweather camp
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
So
yep.
he's
I heard of him.
You know, he's doing 4 and 6 rounds now. Obviously, he's got to get up to 10 rounds as he moves through his boxing career. But is that a factor in your overall evaluation in terms of, you know, one era,
yeah.
you know,
I mean,
15,
I mean,
like the Thriller in Manila,
yeah.
you know, that's crazy. I mean, that's just insane. That was
your
a 15 rounder that went 14. He just wasn't letting Frazier go out. You know,
science,
but,
this is where we're at a point in life right now where it's not just about boxing, it's about everything. We have DNA testing that could find murders from years ago. It's the same thing with you do the analysis. I hang out with ring doctors and Stellar, and I get their opinion, and I ask them about these things. And one of the things that we don't realize is, okay, if you take the human body, okay, you know, I had some heart things going on, and I start learning, you know, you got to start learning stress levels as we get older, and you start learning your body, the anatomy of your body. Mm-hmm. The reality of it is 45 minutes of anything, whether you're reading, whether you're writing, whether you're working out, or you're just doing yoga, 45 minutes is the pinnacle of every human activity.
Mm.
And what people don't understand is we're talking 45 minutes of boxing, but we're also, what people don't understand is you got to add into an account now. So let's take the calculator. You got 15 rounds times
mm-hmm.
three. That's 45
mm-hmm.
minutes.
Right.
That 45 minutes is also really an hour, because the minute rest that you're getting is not – people don't realize that minute rest, as you get older, it hurts me when I box now. I don't want a minute rest. I want a 30-second break, because you have to go right back that minute rest. If you're in condition, you could run a marathon. You could run longer than 15 minutes. I mean, longer than an hour. The thing is, when you sit down for that hour, the momentum gets broken out. Now you got to prepare yourself mentally to go out there and go for the kill again. So that right there, sometimes when you break that 45-minute mark and you put it into an hour, the human body starts breaking down. You get more dehydrated. That's why you probably seen so much brain trauma. You notice they stopped the 15-round fights. I think it was after the Boom Boom Mancini, Dunk Kim fight.
Dunk Kim fight. Interesting story about that, too. The referee later committed suicide, and
yeah.
I was told by a pretty positive source that it wasn't suicide, that it was a hit, because with Kim dying, Kim's mother committed suicide, and supposedly he was hit by some oriental fractions because of the fact that not stopping the fight caused not only the death of the fighter, but his mother could commit suicide too, and I'm not going to mention the name who told me that. I will off the air to both of you guys, and that wasn't, especially, you know, black people a little, but yeah, that was a hit because they felt the fight should have been stopped, and he wouldn't have died, and his mother wouldn't have committed suicide. But yeah, the 12 round fights came in after that, and Marion Borgen says, you know, when a guy kills somebody, they lose both fights, which makes the career of Robinson phenomenal, because Ray dreamed that he'd beat Eddie Doyle. Dreamed that he was going to kill him. And he went and told me the fight was off. They said, no, Ray, you know, it's just a dream. He said, they brought a priest in, they brought a minister in, and Doyle was only fighting that fight to, the money to buy a house for his mother. Sugar Ray Robinson donated his next three purses to Doyle's mother so she could buy that house.
But it shows you how great he was. He said to his mother after that, I only fought good enough to win. That's remarkable. I can stop playing a game of basketball. I cannot try to hit the right field. I cannot run as hard. But to fight only good enough to win and be considered the greatest fighter who ever lived, there's a lot about him. But I didn't know. I learned that recently that he started to retire, but he donated purses from his next three fights so he could buy the house for the dog was going to buy for his mother. I wanted to get cut off here, fellas, so we'll keep going for a little while. Let me let Larry do a plug for us, and then we can do Sports and Death off mic. Larry.
Hi, I'm Larry Hardesty from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. Did you enjoy the show? It was outstanding, but I expect that from the legendary Don Stanley. Nothing less than the best. As he always says to me, and this is my favorite saying from him, live your life today as if you have to stand before God tomorrow. Words to live by. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great night, and we'll see you next time on Sports and Death with the legendary Don Stanley.
And if I may say that the Sports In Depth Nation is here. The Sports In Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is indeed here, and that's the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, Doc.
And we're running into Sports In Depth off mic. I'm Chef Jones, and we continue. Continuing on the Trust in God Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. Mike on. We're running. G-Dub, jump shot.
Yes.
Eric Sanders, Eric, hold up. Renee? Go ahead, gentlemen.
Yeah, so I'm gonna close in over here because I got to head out, but I do want to say I got a few questions for you guys.
Good.
Now, the boxing question that I have for you guys. Marlon Starlin, do you guys think he should be out in the Boxing Hall of Fame?
Who was that?
Marlon Starlin. Guy who won the title from Mark Breland. I don't have a lot of respect for the Boxing Hall of Fame. It's bogus, and I'm continuing losing respect for the Baseball Hall of Fame. Fred McGriff gets in before Don Mattingly does, as the words of the late, great stickball giant, St. Clair T. McCovey Bradford, surely you jest. They just did the voting, you know, where they vote guys in. Fred McGriff beat out Don Mattingly. Don Mattingly has the highest fielding percentage of any first baseman in history of baseball, home runs in 8 straight games, the greatest Yankee first baseman along with Lou Gehrig, okay, and was one manager of the year, too. He's won a batting championship. He's been an MVP. And Fred McGriff beat out Don Mattingly, one of the finest human beings ever walking the earth, and the greatest first baseman in the history of the Yankees behind Lou Gehrig. There'll never be another first baseman. Donnie Baseball, nickname given to him by none other than our buddy there, like Terry Puckett. So these Hall of Fames.
I don't know enough about Marlon Starlin to really answer the question, unfortunately.
Well, Mookie should be there. I mean, you have enough guys in there that aren't there, but there are there that shouldn't be there. I mean, when I was one of the collectors when they first started out, but then once I wasn't a member of the boxing rights anymore, I couldn't. But you got too many guys in there that shouldn't be there. But Marlon Starlin, you know, should be there. He was outstanding champion, great defensive fighter, beat Mark Breland, the greatest amateur fighter in the history of boxing. He was the world champion, defended his title. I think he should be there. You know, there's too many guys in there. It's like baseball. Baseball has too many guys in there that shouldn't be there. Is Enos Lauder a Hall of Famer? Is Ron Sandberg really a Hall of Famer? You know, but, you know, connections and complexions, you know, that's how they work a lot of times.
We're advocating for him right now in Connecticut because, you know, I got to call into the boxing.
Well, you know, if you want, I can get you Ed Brophy's number, you know.
If
you know Ed Brophy, you know what I mean? I can try to get him and have him on the show.
I really don't like to talk to Ed. I mean, we boom, boom, boom. But, you know, when he's talking about Doc, you know, you're not a member of the boxing writers anymore.
I have to be honest with you. I reached out to Ed Gwofi 3 times, and I haven't got a call back when I said I was calling tomorrow.
Ed,
I always got a
you know
phone
what?
Call
then,
back.
Down the line, then, I'll have his number, come back from Brazil. We'll call him and see if he can be on the show. And then we'll have him here. He'll have to answer.
Marlon, you know, for me to see Marlon right now, Marlon is really going through a real tough period financially. And, you know, I saw him at the Hall of Fame, you know, selling autographs. And, you know, he's one of our, you know, we're a small state, Connecticut. But to me, when I see guys that are getting inducted into the Hall of Fame and I see a record like his, I can understand if it was 20 years. Yeah, but we're going on a long time now. You know what I mean? This is 2023 we're going on.
Same thing with Don Mattingly. But, you know, like I said, I just said some complexions and connections. You know what I mean? It's sad and touching, as Harold Weston says. I think Harold Weston should be in the Hall of Fame. Not only beyond the box, the first and only black matchmaker in Madison Square Garden history and considered the best. Yeah, and so he's not in the Boxing Hall of Fame. So, I mean, you know, Art Russ Jr. is not in the Boxing Hall of Fame. Marion Borkin is not in the greatest boxing show of all. I remember, man, you know, Marion Borkin's show had everybody. Leroy Neiman had artists. It had writers. It had politicians. You know, and when you went someplace, man, if he was like E.F. Hutton, two names you always mention, if you would mention that somebody would stop and talk. Art Russ Jr., what? Well, I'd say, Marion Borkin, is the Borkster here? I remember Jordan Madge always asked me, is Arthur here? But, you know, complexity and connections, man. That's how it is sometimes, man. Okay, GWG, you got to run?
Yeah, I'm in a minute. But
I got to get ready to go also.
All right, but, you know, if y'all want to run, we'll let Marvin Gaye have this to say on the way. Jump Shot, Jonesy.
I got one question for you. This is for Jump Shot. Jump Shot.
Yeah.
I saw a video on Facebook yesterday with Magic Johnson and Isaiah Thomas making up after 30 years. Was that old or was that recent?
That's within the last 5 years.
It was. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, that's for the last 5 years.
The era was, you know, I think, you know, Isaiah Thomas is a better guard than both Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan. He can pass just as good as Magic, plays defense better than Magic, and has a jump shot better than Magic. Jump shot just as good as Mike. Mike, you want to give Mike the defensive edge, but he's a better ball handler. Isaiah Thomas was the best guard of that era, and Isaiah was the guy who had no superstars on his team that owned the winning record against the Bulls. And I think it was Isaiah who always talked positively of Magic, and I think Magic was the one that came up short as a friend on that. You know what I mean? I don't understand, and I've always said Isaiah should have been on the Dream Team, and I put that on some of the black guys that talked against him negatively. But Isaiah should have been on that team. But the makeup, I don't think Isaiah harbored anything. And I think it was, if anything, and may not have been a problem of both sides, but there's no question in my mind, Isaiah harbored nothing. And it was Irving who, no matter how short, you know, if you got 99 cents, it still ain't a dollar. I think it was Irving who came up short on that. Because I think he should have orchestrated for him to be on that team, as it was Isaiah who was the VP of the Players Association who told them that Magic was going to be in that all-star team. When guys are bitching about, well, he's got that. He's on the team. So, you know, I think he was always been a friend. I think he's been the better friend. I remember he said something to me, and I told him about Michael Jordan. I remember the great sports writer, my man, Mr. Woods, Brown, told me that, you know, Isaiah sent some guys when Mike first came to Chicago. He said, hey, Doc, you and Jump Shot, go down, tell Mike anything he needs, you got it. And they went to him, and Mike blew the guys off, you know, supposedly. And then when the Dream Team came up, he supposedly called Mike at home. And Mike said, I got nothing to do with it, you know what I mean? You know, but, you know. I said, you know, Isaiah, you know, I know it went down, man, with that thing with you. And Mike said, but, you know, when you broadcast the games,
There's always adulation. There's always support. You're always talking about him in a positive. There's no tones or sounds of negativity, jealousy, or sarcasm. And I never forget what Isaiah Lord Thomas told me. He said, hey, man, he said, I got to be able to look at myself in the mirror. And I wonder how many guys on that dream team can look at themselves in the mirror. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that was something. I saw the thing, and, you know, they broke down. But I think if there was a shortcoming, the biggest shortcoming was on Irvin's side. And he, you know, the thing he talked about, and they had him on the knuckleheads. He said, well, you know, I didn't make the dream team, but you know what? You know, it was good for Irving and the thing that was happening to him, and I'm happy third period. Isaiah Thomas is a great basketball player. Isaiah is a great player. Well, you know, Isaiah, he was trying to win. Wasn't everybody trying to win? They talk about Michael Jordan, how he got on his teammate. Nobody was harder on his teammates than Oscar Robertson. Well, Fred just told me, Oscar used to go, but they act like Mike's the only guy, and Mike may have went over the line. But, yeah, that was something you asked Jump Shot, but I saw that too. But I think, you know, the shortcoming was on Irving's part, not on Isaiah's. And if you look at it, Isaiah Thomas was the best guard of that era. He could handle the ball he could handle the ball better than Magic. He could pass as good as Magic, but the advantage he had on Magic was the jump shot. The advantage he had on Mike was the passing ability, the dribbling, the jump shot. Like Willie Mays, name me a player, and I'll tell you where Willie Mays is better than he is. And you know, and Isaiah's record shows, you know, his team had a winning percentage over Michael Jordan's team. Yeah. I guess I'm too bad. Right. We gone, gentlemen? Any last thoughts?
All right. Yeah. Congratulations to Fred McGriff. However,
you're right about
I don't know
yeah, you're
how,
right.
I don't know how, if Fred McGriff gets in the Hall of Fame, how Barry Bonds doesn't. It doesn't
add up. Jump Shot, you know what? Jump Shot, you know the one too, baby. You know, they don't realize, man, you go get the rebound too, don't you, baby? Go get the rebound too. Oh, great point. Thanks, Jump Shot. Gentlemen, we will be
good
doing our next show.
GW. Good stuff tonight.
I love you.
It always
great
is.
Talking to you.
Yeah, it always is. And like, gentlemen, like I said, you guys are, what makes this show is you guys, man. You know, you guys aren't the best, absolute best. You know what I mean? You're beyond compare. Your colleagues and friendships that are true and rare, and you make Sports in Depth what it does. And I'm blessed to have you guys as not only sports family, but as friends. Yeah, thanks a lot. Love you dearly.
Thank you.
Sports in Depth Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and God Network. Jump Shot Jonesy. Early we had Gilberto TKO Ortiz and GW Mike. We've got to go. It's the end of the show. Keep us in your thoughts and prayer. Pray for Pelé. He's having some issues there. And keep us all in your family prayers. And I know, gentlemen, you got to run. But as you go, we're going to have Marvin Gaye has this to say as we all get ready to go all on our way. On Jump Shot, Jonesy, GW Mike, Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. Mr. Gaye, come on in and have your say about, as they would say sometimes, you had to say, the chilling.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time.
Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth Blog Talk Radio. GW, you running out on us? We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm going to head out, man. But great show tonight, Doc, man. Enjoyed that, man.
Well, as always is. You came in, so that, you know, something outstanding with you. Regards to be there. Take it to
really
tell cares. The world.
Who really cares? Who's willing to try?
On Dina's WhatsApp when I get to Brazil. Great
so
stuff as always. Put some things in there, man. That was
so there,
great show. Monday. Yep, Monday, pray for Pelé, Brazil, Fury, Brady Bucks win.
Of the Gates, taking us out.
When I look at the world, it fills me with sorrow. It fills me with sorrow. Little children today. Children today. Really gonna suffer tomorrow. Really suffer tomorrow. Oh, what a shame. What a shame. Such a bad way to live. Such a bad way to live.
Okay, go ahead, G-Dub.
So I have a friend of mine who is a big soccer. He's from Brazil. His father used to play, I think it was a semi-pro.
Yeah, what part of Brazil is he from?
I don't know. I got to ask him.
Okay,
family originated from Brazil, and the mother's family's from Chile. So I wanted to bring him on as like he's a pretty big soccer guy. So I don't know if you want to bring him on, maybe do a little soccer while we're doing the World Cup.
Well, two things here: it's not soccer over there; it's football.
Football, yeah.
But you got get his name and number stuff because I'm gonna be in Brazil on Thursday, on Friday.
No, he lives in the United States. His family's from Brazil.
Oh, okay. All right. Get his information for me. Give him my number, and we'll try to. I wish we could. Okay, you know what? Maybe we can do something real quick before I go. Yeah. Okay.
When are you leaving? When are you leaving?
I'm leaving Thursday.
All right. Maybe if we get a show on either tomorrow or Wednesday.
Just get back to me with the information. What part of Brazil he's from? What sport he took right now? Brazil won today, so they're going into the final eight now. So okay, no problem. No problem.
All right.
Thanks.
All right, Doc.
Okay. Got you still on it. Bye.
Yeah. To save our world. Yeah. To save our sweet world. Save a world that is destined.
This is Michael Bellamy of Brooklyn Independent Media, and you're listening to Doc Stanley of Sports in Depth on Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, and with that, we're about ready to roll into the show here. Let's do our close out for you. We can still get it. Jump shot. And GW, here we go. Up Monday, April Pele. Three Brady Bucks win. Sports and Depth with Dr. Melvin, Doc Stanley Sr. and Sports Posse members, Jumpshot Jonesy, DW Mike. Join Doc on this segment. This is an in-depth form of education. Let's look at the world of sports, and this is the show, Sports and Depth. Raising with both a daily and historical perspective, also both an in-depth look and perspective, not only on the sports of our times, but two of the players and performers. Absolute respect. God given talent and conditioning. God blessed mind filled with passion, determination, intellect, knowledge, and diverse intellect of God's iconic possible. Thanks for joining us once again, where we always lift the rumors, find last issues, and brand the truth. Being a champion doesn't mean you are. Times doing better doesn't mean you are doing so. Most people don't plan to die, they just do. What has to be done for you has to be. What you don't do doesn't mean it ain't supposed to be done. A combination of common sense and intellect, bad. Any words of wisdom and truth. Dr. Stanley, Sports Depth, Blog Talk Radio, and Trust and Guard Radio Network. Faith, your prayers, all in your prayers. God bless you all. Trust in God, 100%. I'm Stanley, hosting that Blog Talk Radio, the Trust in God, the network. God.
I'm Larry Hardesty from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. Did you enjoy the show? It was outstanding. But I expect that from the legendary Doc Stanley. Nothing less than the best. As he always says to me, and it's my favorite saying from him, live your life today as if you have to stand before God tomorrow. Words to live by. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great night, and we'll see you next time on Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley.
And we're closing and saluting to Brazil's victory today, 4-1. And in memory, keeping in prayers, greatest football player of all time, Pelé. Doc Stanley, Sports Net Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust in God Radio Network. Trust in God, 100%.
Moça do corpo dourado, do sol de Ipanema, o seu balançado é mais que um poema, é a coisa mais linda que eu já vi passar. Ah, por que estou tão sozinho? Ah, por que tudo é tão triste? A beleza que existe, a beleza que não é só minha, que também passa sozinha. Ah, se ela soubesse que quando ela passa, o mundo...
A Rádio Pajeú é o mundo todo. Fala, Stanley, direto dos Estados Unidos.
Meu nome é Doc Stanley.
Meu nome é Doc Stanley.
E eu moro em Nova York.
Eu moro em Nova York.
Nos Estados Unidos.
Nos Estados Unidos.
E estou ouvindo Radio Web Pajeú.
Estou ouvindo a Rádio Web Pajeú.
Um abraço.
Um abraço.
Hugs. God bless you.
Deus abençoe você.
Eita, menino, quer dizer que agora é internacional, é?
Yes. Ué.
What?